using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 20th of April, year of our Lord, 2021, day 402 of America Held Hostage. Today we have a lot of updates about information about vaccines, the harmful effects. Turns out that the blood clot issue about six people, that was a complete lie. We're going to talk about that. Other issues we also have is our guest Nick Cole, co-author of Galaxy's Edge, talking about how Hollywood refuses to make movies for their, quote, white Christian trash audiences. Let's begin today with some data, and some data that is being hidden in the trial of Pastor Coates in Canada. His defense attorneys, who are trying to defend not just him, but the Charter of Canada, had asked for some scientific data to back up these lockdowns, you know, because it's all just about science, right? Well, the government refuses to show that data. And I've told you over and over again how much this is like climate change, exactly like climate change. Not only are the desired outcomes exactly the same, whether you're talking about a global ice age or a global warming or a pandemic, always the same solution, but always the same MO. Tell you with the mantle of science and authority that they know exactly what's going to happen, so follow them and do exactly what they say, but they will not show you the data. So we're going to take a look at that, but let's take a look first at some data discovered by the British Medical Journal. John Appleby, Director of Research at the Nuffield Trust, drew on government data to look at deaths in England and Wales in 2020 and put it into an historical context. And so the first thing that we see in terms of absolute number of deaths, and here's the chart so you can take a look at it here. In terms of absolute number of deaths, 2020 was the worst year since 1838, except for the Spanish flu year of 1918. And you see that highlighted there. So they go back a long way, back to 1838. And so that looks pretty bad, doesn't it? Well, the problem is that we have a lot more people, right? And this is one of the games that they've played, talking about the absolute number of deaths instead of, and not normalizing it to the population. You know, we have probably about 10 times the number of people, I believe, because I think the entire population of the 13 colonies at the time, 1776, was about 2.5 million people. We have well more than 10 times that in Texas alone today. So if you're going to go back and you're going to compare the absolute number of deaths, you're going to be lying to people. That's why they say statistics don't lie, but liars use statistics. And so if you do not normalize this to population, you're presenting a distorted figure. So they normalized it to population. Here's what they found. As a proportion of population, it was only the worst year since 2003. And yet it's not all that much bigger than 2003. Notice how that came down when you normalize it to population? And then they said, well, let's take into account the fact that the population is getting much older. And so if we standardize the figures by age, then you get this chart right here. And you see that 2020 was less deadly than 2008 and every year prior to 2008. And so this is the issue, folks. When you look at this, and I've talked about this, how this is really a relabeling of the actuarial tables. We expect people to die at a certain age. That's why they call it life expectancy. Sorry to break the news to you. But the clock is ticking on each and every one of us. All the more reason for us not to lock ourselves in our homes and hide from the world. We only have a certain amount of time. We don't know when that's going to be. Do you want to spend it living in fear, masked up and locked down? No. No. And so when we look at this, I've said this is really a relabeling of the actuarial table, calling it a COVID pandemic. And then in addition to that, we have a aging population, very rapidly aging population. You know, the baby boomers are in that area there where they say everybody is dying of COVID. So is this just a relabeling of the actuarial tables and an aging population? They say in this article from lockdownskeptics.org, a point that the researchers does not make, however, is that the historically low levels of the previous 11 years would have left an unusually large amount of dry tinder for any novel virus to burn through. So when you look at that last chart again, this is the highest it's been since 2008, but the death rates were dropping. And now that we have locked out people from the hospital for any condition that the hospitals can't get a bonus for, COVID, being a test positive for COVID, you get right the head of the line, because not only do they get a big cash payment, but they also get a bonus of 20 to 25% over and above what they would normally charge for everything that they do to you. So it's pushing people with many other conditions out as well. The graphs also make it clear that previous similar pandemics, such as 1957 and 1968, let's show that again, made only a modest impact on mortality, and only for a year or two, notwithstanding the lack of vaccines or social interventions. In other words, we had the Hong Kong flu, we had the Asian flu, we had the swine flu two times. All these other pandemics, quote-unquote, we never did any of this stuff. And it didn't make any difference. I played for you a few weeks ago a flashback story. The year after the swine flu epidemic in 2009-2010, the most notable thing about that, just like the previous swine flu epidemic back in the 1970s, was the injuries from vaccines. A year later, we had a local news station saying, "What happened to the swine flu? Look at all the stories that we had a year ago. It was nothing but the swine flu this and swine flu that, and now we don't have any stories about that. It's just disappeared." There's nothing about this disease to think the long-term pattern should be any different than would justify some kind of radical, permanent change to the way that we interact, organize our lives. It's important to remember that our immune system develops and maintains resistance to a host of pathogens through being frequently exposed to them, and that social isolation is not merely ineffective, but it deprives us of the opportunity to keep our immunity popped up. Which kind of reminds me of George Carlin. I don't play it too often because of his language, but I have to bleep it severely. But he was talking about his immune system and how rock solid it was. And goes, "And you know why? Because when I grew up in New York, we swam in excrement, to put it politely. You know, the water was so dirty, we swam in that stuff. And we developed ironclad immune systems." And he's not exaggerating either. You know, I've had a lot of friends who adopted young girls from China that were in the orphanages. And for at least the first 10 or 12 years they were here, they just didn't get sick. It was funny. Everybody else in the family would get sick, but these kids that were adopted from the orphanages who, like George Carlin, were basically swimming in excrement and sanitary conditions. They were the group that had immune systems that, first of all, were strong enough they could withstand that. Secondly, they exercised that immune system, and they just didn't get sick. It was a running joke with all of us. Like, yeah, the orphanage girls are not getting sick. So we're creating a very pampered and weak population, children. Very weak. But let's take a look at some more data. Actually, let's not take a look at the data, says the government. Just like ClimateGate. You had emails surfaced out of the University of East Anglia in the UK. Funny how this stuff seems to come out of England all the time, right? You know, the Imperial College of London putting out these lies that were used by Fauci and Birx to get Trump to do a lockdown. And, of course, we had the University of East Anglia doing their talking to each other in emails that were some people saw some of these and wanted them exposed, so they fought for it. They would not allow those emails to be released. And the government in the UK agreed. They did not want these emails released. Fortunately, after a little while, somebody in Russia hacked into that and released that information. Thank you very much. And that was ClimateGate 1. It happened again a few years later. ClimateGate 2. The first batch of emails was about 1,000. And then the next group, a few years later, about 5,000 emails. And it implicated these people, these so-called scientists, these climate experts, in a cover-up. Saying, well, you know, what we're seeing here, the temperature doesn't match what we predicted with our models, and we've got to find some way to hide that and to explain that and to manipulate that. To manipulate the statistics. Can you imagine that? People who are experts, who are bureaucrats, who are crafting public policy, manipulating statistics for a political agenda? Perish the thought. I mean, these people, you must trust everything they have to say. And by the way, if you don't trust them, you'll be burned down on social media and elsewhere. Nevertheless, those things were exposed, and there was also Michael Mann, the guy who created the hockey stick, a famous chart, The Lie, about how temperature was going to go up exponentially with an increase in CO2. Didn't happen. The CO2 went up, temperature did not go up. But you remember, that was a key thing that was featured by Al Gore in his lying documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. And that documentary was completely taken apart by Lord Monckton, as they were using that to propagandize children in the UK. And he completely destroyed the quote-unquote science behind that, to the extent that a judge agreed, all right, well, you should, if you're going to show this movie to kids and propagandize them and scare them to death about, you know, the sky is falling environmentalism, then you need to show this commentary that was done by, have them read this point-by-point expose of the lies in the Inconvenient Truth documentary by Al Gore. Of course, you know that they watched the movie. That's very visceral. They do not read the documentary. They just see the pictures of the polar bears on floating ice and telling you that they're stranded and they're dying because the ice is melting, that type of thing. And so we've seen this rodeo before. Here in the United States, we tried to get the information from at the University of Virginia, and they hid that data. And now the same thing is happening with the lockdown. The Canadian government will not show evidence for lockdowns in the trial of the pastor charged in breaking their regulations that were based, you know, on science. So show us. They were going to delay the trial, and as I said, I think the reason they were doing that was because they wanted to keep, this is also the church, remember they arrested James Coates, put him in jail for 35 days. First couple of weeks of that, at least, he was kept in solitary confinement, only got out for 15 minutes a day. And they finally released him and reduced some of the charges. And then they put, early one morning, they came out with a large show of force, a massive amount of people from the with the police, and put three layers of fences around his church. And I said, I think they're trying to delay this because as soon as they take that down, as soon as he wins, they're going to continue to hold church. And as long as they hold church, it's showing that this whole thing is a lie. And it's amazing to me to see these people, when I talk about that, engage me on Twitter and say, he's a super spreader. He doesn't care for anybody's health. He's risking everybody's lives. It's like, no, no, no. Hundreds of people, or in the case of the California church and many other churches, but you know, the two that are well known, John MacArthur in L.A. and this particular one with James Coates, he's got hundreds of people. John MacArthur's got thousands of people. 7,000 to 8,000 people meeting every week, not obeying any of Fauci's regulations, and nobody getting sick. And this is since July, both of these churches. So they're not putting anybody's lives at risk. The people that are putting your lives at risk are these health bureaucrats. Can't you see that? I mean, that's the very point. That's why they're coming after him. Because he shows that this is a lie. And now we see, even more so, as the trial proceeds, even more lies from the Canadian government are being exposed by the persecution that they are enacting on Pastor James Coates. So they will go ahead and have their trial at the beginning of May. They're not going to delay it. However, the court granted the government's request that Pastor Coates not be permitted to challenge the constitutional validity orders, and the government will not be required to produce scientific evidence in support of Dr. Henshaw's orders. Now, this is the, you know, the Canadian Fauci in that particular province. Government lawyers told the court that the Alberta government could not produce any scientific evidence in support of Dr. Henshaw's orders in time for the May 3rd trial. A few years ago, Del Bigtree, Robert Kennedy Jr., asked the HHS, which is collecting the information, I believe it was HHS, collecting the information about the adverse effects of vaccines under the Immunity Act that was ushered in by Fauci in 1986. They were supposed to continue to keep data so that they could make recommendations to improve safety of vaccines. So they're supposed to keep, that's part of what the VAERS system that is done by the CDC, Vaccine Adverse Effects Reporting System, VAERS, and we'll have more to say about that. But they do keep that, but they were also supposed to do more detailed research about this. Those are just reports. And so they say, well, that's what people reported. They say that they were hurt by the vaccines, but we haven't done the research. But the HHS was supposed to do that research for over 30 years. And so they said, we'd like to see what you've done here, because you were tasked with being a watchdog for public health to watch this, to make recommendations. They said, no, we're not going to show you the data, just like right here in Canada. And so then they had to sue them. After they sued them, and the doctor said, and the judge said, show them the data. Show me the money, Jerry. That's what they should have said. Show me the money that you're getting for putting this up. Yeah, Jerry Maguire. Show them the data. They said, well, we didn't keep any data. And so what they're saying is, we can't produce any of the data, any of the scientific evidence in support of the orders in time for the May 3rd trial. Now, that just beggars belief, as they pointed out. We're now in our 13th month of these Canadian charter-violating lockdowns. By May 3rd, the government will have had 14 months to assemble proper medical and scientific evidence to justify the lockdowns and the violations of our fundamental charter freedoms. The Alberta government supposedly has, this is the lawyers for James Coates, the Alberta government supposedly has enough medical and scientific evidence to shut down hundreds of small businesses, pushing many of them into bankruptcy, and to cancel over 20,000 medically necessary surgeries, and to force Albertans into a third lockdown. But when asked to produce this medical and scientific evidence at trial, the Alberta government declares itself incapable of doing so. Our little emperors have no clothes. Our little emperors have no data. Our little emperors have no science. This is a bluff, folks. James Coates called their bluff. He's been doing it for 7 months. That's why they locked him up. That's why they put three layers of fencing around his church and sent an army of over 200 people and helicopters and armored vehicles to do that, because he called their bluff. He exposed their lies simply by living the truth. He said, I'm not a freedom fighter, not a rebel. I'm simply called to worship God, and I'm going to do that regardless of the consequences. I'm going to obey God. And in obeying God and living his life, he exposed their lies. That's what we're all called to do. So they said, this is an unjustified violation of the Charter Rights and Freedoms, his lawyers. The Justice Center, defending him, was and still is prepared to present extensive scientific and expert witness medical evidence at his trial that will demonstrate that Dr. Henshaw, their Canadian Fauci, his lockdown orders are unscientific, unnecessary, and ineffective. So the government may not have any data that they can use to defend this, but these people are going to present real medical experts who will testify and show that that is not the case. They said Pastor Coates is defending freedom of association, freedom of peaceful assembly, which are freedoms exercised by the entire population, not just churchgoers. And yet, as I pointed out, as they were locking this church down, you had so many people in the area, little snitches that have been filing complaints against them. So many people there taunting them, celebrating the fact that the church was closed off with three layers of fencing. Because that's where we are in a society. And if you want to know why this is happening to us, that is why it's happening to us. This is not happening to us simply because we have men, evil men in power who are ruling over us. No, that's the penultimate cause. The ultimate cause is that God has put those men in power to rule over us because we are shaking our fist at him in every way that we possibly can. So we shall see what happens with that. Not a good position for Western governments to be in, quite frankly. Fauci says he's very frustrated to get questioned about freedoms without mentioning COVID deaths and health safety, because that's a higher priority for me. Oh, yeah, we know that he doesn't care about freedom. Right? That was the thing that came out with the questioning of Jim Jordan. And I think it also showed that Jim Jordan doesn't really care about freedom either, because he's not doing anything other than posturing. You know, he asks these questions with a mask over his face. At least Thomas Massey, when he, you know, you have to have a mask on your face, according to Pelosi. Well, defy her. Defy her. It's not enough to sit there and constantly pull your mask off and say, but what about liberty, Dr. Fauci? When are you going to give us our freedom back? Will you give us our freedoms back if we get a vaccine or something like that? What is it that we have to do? Please tell us. Now, you could say these are rhetorical questions, but it appears to me that he's begging. Don't ask for your freedom. Take it. Live it. Live your life. So, on Friday's broadcast, after that exchange with Jim Jordan, Joy Reid says to Fauci, does it shock you? Frustrate you? How do you feel when you're peppered with questions about, you know, restrictions and freedoms? And the dead not mentioned. Oh, I think the dead have been mentioned all the time. As a matter of fact, when you look at MSNBC, I don't know if it was on her program or not, but every time I see clips from Morning Joe, where Joe Scarborough is going into his rages about nonsense, they always have a running death toll there. They're even worse than Matt Drudge when it comes to the running death total, you know, quote unquote. People that are presumed to have died with COVID, people that they say tested positive with their PCR test as they're abusing it. Well, Fauci responded, he says, well, it's very frustrating because, you know, as a public health official, I'm very much aware of this issue of COVID-19 fatigue. About people really being worn down and tired of the kinds of restrictions we have when we do public health guidelines. But, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. Do they? I think they do, in a sense, because you're covering up the numbers. And I think that speaks very loudly. Just like Canada. We're not allowed to dig down into the data. We're not allowed to examine the data. They just put up a number. What is the number today? Well, it's whatever Dr. Fauci said. So put the number up and bow down and worship. The numbers, we got the numbers. I got cases left and right. They're coming out of my ears, right? So, yeah, one person responded to this and said, well, I challenge him to make gun violence a public health issue because he also talked about gun violence. Because it's a subject that is approached scientifically with data-driven statistical approach. And I believe some interesting results will need to be explained. So, yeah, good luck with that. Because this guy is a master at twisting and manipulating numbers. That's what he does for a living. I replied, I posted that video of her talking to him. As a matter of fact, let me play that video for you, then I'll give you my comments. So this is Fauci talking about gun violence, because, you know, that is also what he's about. Because, see, what he's about is control. What he is about is taking your liberty, telling you that he's going to keep you safe. That's the way they take your liberty. That's the way they get control. And so gun control is ultimately control of people. And everything about this Fauci pandemic has been the control of people. Here's what Fauci had to say in terms of guns.
Before I let you go, I want to ask about another epidemic in the U.S., and that is gun violence. 8 people were shot and killed in a mass shooting in Indianapolis on Thursday night. The U.S. has reported 47 mass shootings in just over a month. You've worked in public health broadly for a long time. Is gun violence in the U.S. a public health emergency?
You know, myself as a public health person, I think you can't run away from that. I mean, when you see people getting killed, I mean, in this last month, it's just been horrifying what's happened. How can you say that's not a public health issue?
No, so there you go. There's Mr. Non-Political Fauci weighing in on gun violence and says it's now a public health issue. You can't run away from that. It's there, right? And it's been horrific this last... No, it's been horrific this last year, Fauci. Why is it that increased suicides, and we've talked about how suicides have gone through the ceiling, especially amongst the young. Why is it, Fauci, that increased suicides, increased drug addiction, increased domestic violence from your lockdown demands, why is that not a public health issue? Those things have killed far more people than any mass shootings. And, yeah, of course, that's not anything that... he's going to be concerned about, because, you know, we don't care. That's just the price we pay to be free of a virus. China has now launched a new app allowing citizens to report other people for expressing, quote, mistaken opinions. Sounds very much like what we have happening here in the U.S., doesn't it? Malicious people, said the Chinese Communist Party. This is actually China's Cyberspace Administration of China. a little bit of redundancy there. Malicious people distorting facts and confusing others. And they want people to take an active role in helping to identify those extremists and criminals. Do you see how close we are? How aligned we already are with the Chinese communists? Here's a quote. For a while now, some people with ulterior motives have spread historically nihilistic false statements online, maliciously distorting, slandering, and denying party, national, and military history in an attempt to confuse people's thinking. Is that really any different? Right? Our Marxists here in America have undying loyalty to their party, to their understanding of national history. And of course, as far as the military aspect of it goes, all of this censorship, the internet, social media, all of these mechanisms put in place by the military-industrial complex, going back to the DARPA's projects in the 1960s, as I've pointed out many times, then actively funding it in the 1990s when it became practical based on bandwidth. We hope that most internet users will play an active role in supervising society and enthusiastically report harmful information. Well, they know that that will happen because that's being done already in the United States. As a matter of fact, Chelsea Clinton is a good example of this, because, you know, the poison apple doesn't fall far from the poison tree. She tweeted out, in December, Facebook banned claims about COVID-19 vaccines, quote, that have been debunked by public health experts. And yet, especially troubling, given that Republican men are currently most likely to say they're not interested in being vaccinated. That was her reply to Tucker Carlson suggesting the vaccines don't work. Actually, Tucker Carlson's not the only one suggesting that. The people who are making the vaccines and the World Health Organization is essentially saying that. World Health Organization is pushing back against the idea of vaccine passports. You know the reason why? They say, well, it looks like the vaccines are not very effective. That's the thing that should concern you. At first, the headline looks like good news. Oh, look, the World Health Organization is pushing back against vaccine passports. Can that be? No, they are never going to push back against any of this evil. No, no, no. What they're doing is they're pushing a different kind of evil on you. They're pushing lockdown and masks forever by saying that you need to get the vaccines, even though they don't work. They're still going to demand that you take them. But because they don't work, you're not going to get any freedom. And she went on attacking Tucker Carlson last week. Tucker Carlson consistently spews racist, bigoted, anti-Semitic hate and misinformation across his platforms. He doesn't deserve a microphone. Unbelievable. Glenn Greenwald had the best takedown of Chelsea Clinton. He replied, please remove from the internet any content that displeases or otherwise causes any discomfort for Chelsea Clinton. That's right, because she's just like Xi Jinping. She's the same as she, isn't she? The German court is now banning what they call lateral thinking. I reported yesterday how Vice went after what they admitted at the very end of the article was a very broad coalition of people against the vaccine mandates. People from the left, people from the right, people in the health movements, people who were nationalists and so forth. But they painted everybody with a broad stroke, saying they were all conspiracy theorists and anti-Semitic. That's always the thing. It's like, there's nothing about anti-Semitism here. As I pointed out, you want to see anti-Semitism? Take a look at the Nation of Israel and their vaccine policy. That's anti-Semitism. That's Nazi methods. The rigid segregation. The demanding that people participate in an experimental genetic code injection. That is anti-Semitic, if ever there was anything anti-Semitic. But no, no, no. The people who are pushing back on these experimental untested vaccines, they are anti-Semitic right-wing conspiracy theorists. And now they're coming out and saying, well, we have a court ruling that you should not engage in lateral thinking, what they call querdenken. Querdenken, what they call it. Lateral thinking is just them talking about how you're processing information and theorizing. And it's just, I'm not even going to bother to talk about it. Let's talk about the real stuff. I mean, we could talk about every kind of counterfeit way of looking at things. But you know, when they talk about conspiracy theorists, let's understand what we're talking about is deductive reasoning. They don't like that. They don't like deductive reasoning. What is a deductive reasoning? Well, it's the way you do science, frankly. It's the way you do a murder investigation. You have a hypothesis. And then what you do is you test that hypothesis and you start to look at evidence that supports it. And if there's evidence that contradicts it, you have to throw it out. The way Arthur Conan Doyle put it, in the words of his detective, Sherlock Holmes, once you remove everything that is impossible, what's left, no matter how improbable, is the truth. And so deductive reasoning is a hypothesis where you start to examine whether this could possibly have happened. Reject the things that couldn't happen, but you always start with a hypothesis. If you're investigating a murder, you have a list of suspects based on motive or opportunity or things like that, and then you start to rule them out based on physical evidence. They like to call that now conspiracy theory because they don't want actual critical thinking. They call their Marxism, critical race theory, but it's not based on critical thinking. It's based on tribal actions. As we were talking about the masks and other issues and what was happening, the response that Chelsea Clinton and Joy Reid were so upset about the fact that people were challenging Fauci. Let me play for you what Thomas Massey had to say about the masks. He went on Fox News and was talking to the reporter. Kennedy, she introduces him here briefly and then get into his comments.
And then, of course, there's still the mask theater. When can we lose them? Liberty lover and Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massie asked that very question on Capitol Hill.
What is the message that we're trying to send the American people by wearing these stupid masks? Because all of Congress, by the way, cut line. Now, not everybody in here is vaccinated. It's true.
Does the gentleman wish to speak on the amendment?
I am speaking to the, yes, I am.
The gentleman is recognized for the purpose of speaking for the amendment.
I am asking why we have
cut
to
him
wear
off
a mask
if he asks about
the CDC says these are not necessary. Now we're in this committee projecting the image that you're going to have to wear the mask forever, even though everybody in this room has acquired immunity, either through a vaccine or through natural infection.
Joining me to discuss that very man, Kentucky Republican Congressman and House Judiciary Committee member Thomas Massie, making waves yesterday. How were you received by your Democrat colleagues on the Judiciary Committee?
Well, I had to call one of them out for talking without his mask on later on. The rules are so ridiculous they can't even comply themselves. And the other stupid thing is they have us sitting three seats apart, yet we fly here on airplanes shoulder to shoulder. I mean, it's all theater, Kennedy.
Well, it is, and as you have made the point, members of Congress, the vaccine has been made available to you guys, and many of you have also been sick. And we know that herd immunity is not just the number of people who've been vaccinated, but people who have been inoculated essentially through natural means, who have survived the infection and maybe have better immunity because they contracted COVID than people who've gotten the jab.
That's right. But see, that's the problem with what we're projecting here in Congress. All the congressmen went and very publicly got their jab in the arm and showed everybody that they got the vaccine before everybody else, by the way, in December. And now we're saying, oh, even though we're vaccinated and even though we're immune from other things, we're still going to wear these stupid masks. Why are we doing it? That's actually going to discourage people from getting the vaccine. But I don't know.
That's where we are. Even the libertarians like Massie and Rand Paul will pimp for the vaccines as if that is some kind of a solution. And if you wanted to, this is the way I would do it if I was a congressman, because I guess it'd be easier for me to do this because I don't ever want to be a congressman. And so I don't hold that very tightly. I wouldn't hold it very tight. I wouldn't value that very highly. And so I wouldn't have any problem getting thrown out of Congress. What I would do is I would walk in with my mask so I could get in. And when I rose to speak, I would take the thing off and let everybody watch them get freaked out about it, watch them drag me out and throw me out of Congress for not wearing a mask. That's what I would do. But, you know, that's just me because I don't take Congress that seriously. These people do. It's their life. Even the more libertarian ones. Look, we have to understand that we cannot beg these people for freedom, and they aren't doing anything to stop this. They're not doing anything to stop the executive order and the releasing of funding. Massie was one of the few people to push back against the, about the only one, as a matter of fact. I think he was the only one, to push back against Trump's stimulus program and that massive spending. You remember Trump went ballistic on him? Said, we're going to get him out of office. I mean, he lost it. He lost it on Massie. And you know what? Trump lost the election. Massie didn't. So if you're going to talk about liberty, people appreciate that. But let's not talk about the vaccines. That is nothing other than toxic poison and enslavement for people. And we're going to talk about what is happening with these vaccines. It is over the top what is going on with this. But let's finish up with what is happening in the broader lockdown. Australia and New Zealand have opened up what they call a travel bubble. But actually, using the word open is not exactly right, because the bubble is enclosed, and we need to pop that bubble. So you've got some people who said, well, you know, I made this trip over here from Australia to New Zealand, or rather the other way around. We came to Australia December 11th to spend Christmas with our children. We were planning to go back to New Zealand in February. It's been a bit of a nightmare. That's right. It got the opening of the bubble, allowing travel between Australia and New Zealand. We received a lot of saturation coverage from the media in both countries. Live television reporting from airports, providing regular updates on the progress of flights. And then you have the dictator in Australia. Morrison also raised the prospect that by the year's end, Australians who have received the COVID vaccination may be able to travel internationally and then self-isolate at home upon return, rather than facing 2 weeks quarantine in a hotel. That's all it buys you? That you can, you're still going to have to isolate and quarantine for a couple of weeks after you, if you travel abroad, outside of their bubble? But you can do it at home instead of in a jail, these horrible quarantine hotels that they talk about. I mean, we've all been turned into the bubble boy. Do you remember that? The kids who had absolutely no immune system, and they put them essentially in a spacesuit. I remember the first time that came out in the 1970s, a very rare disease where you didn't have an immune system. But that's the way that they're acting, as if we're all in that kind of a situation, and we're not. So again, the WHO has rejected vaccine passports for international travel, but this is not good news. What they're admitting is that the vaccines don't work, which means they're going to continue the lockdowns, the quarantines, and everything else. You will. It's just to keep their controls in place. The committee from the WHO advised governments, quote, do not require proof of vaccination as a condition of entry. Given the limited, although growing evidence, about the performance of vaccines in reducing transmission and the persistent inequity in the global vaccine distribution, state parties are strongly encouraged to acknowledge the potential for requirements of proof of vaccination to deepen inequities and to promote differential freedom of movement. And in a sense, that was what Massey, unfortunately, was harping on. See, we got these people in Congress, and they jump to the head of the line. Well, you know why they're at the head of the line? Not just because they're in Congress, it's because they're so super old. I mean, you've got really, really old people. I talked about this. The average age is something like 80 in the Senate. Matches up with the people who are dying from COVID, because what that is a life expectancy thing. So they put them at the front of the line. But isn't it interesting that even though you've had a lot of Congress people who've gotten it, they only claim that one person died from it, and yet, if you look at that history there, that raises some real interesting questions. Even the young guy who died in his 40s, between the point that he was elected and the point that he got sworn in, he was given some of these experimental drugs when they brought him in with a respiratory illness that they called COVID. So wouldn't you think that in a population that old, that everybody would be dying left and right? But they didn't. For the same reason that nobody got sick or died in John MacArthur's church, 7,000-8,000 people, you know, the demographics in churches skew to the elderly as well, just like it does in Congress and the Senate. And nothing happening with that. The WHO committee also exhorted governments to do whatever they could to support COVAX, the WHO-sponsored Gates-designed program, to supply enough jabs to vaccinate the populations of more than 130 countries. However, the program hasn't managed to allocate nearly enough vaccines, and many poor nations, beyond the 92 officially eligible for aid via COVAX, have no idea where the vaccine supplies will come from. So do you see the hidden agenda here? Headline says WHO rejects vaccine passport for international travelers. And we all rejoice. Except that the details are saying, well, we can't be sure that they're going to work. We can't be sure they're going to stop the spread because, you know, we've got to have the herd immunity. Even though you don't get sick, can't do that. And we can't have multiple tiers. And we have the poor people who don't have it. So we're going to have to pour some more money in to make sure that all the poor people are injected with the Gates vaccine. Funded and developed by Donald Trump, who is demanding that he get credit. Well, there's your credit, Donnie. You grifting, lying, billionaire SOB. Just exactly what you would expect from somebody who had a reality TV show, made money in casinos, and became a billionaire by greasing the palms of crooked politicians in New York City. Donald Trump, who gave us the vaccines and is bragging about it, demanding that we not have any kind of testing at all. I mean, let's not break up his record streak here. He was able to run through the Operation Warp Speed vaccines without any oversight. Let's not pause and do that now, he says. You want to say he was fooled by Fauci? You were fooled. You were fooled if you still support this fool. Meanwhile, in the U.S., CDC Director Walensky, as Ira Hedge puts it, whose fear-mongering has launched her to front-page coverage in the past. That's right. That's it, man. We're all going to die. We're going to die. We're going to buy it on this rock. Remember when she did that? warning that COVID cases have continued to climb even as vaccination numbers have risen. A reality that hasn't escaped millions of Americans who are walking on with their masks on as if nothing has changed. That's right, because you have the forever maskers. It's not just that. These people want to stay masked up forever. New York Magazine reports on this, and they have a quote to begin their article with. A 57-year-old resident in New York said, "We don't know if it's ever going to be over." She's concerned that with the emergence of new variants, we got variants here, and we got cases. I know you can't see them, but trust me, it's science. And the millions of people who refuse to get vaccinated, she said. So, see, the problem is, what's keeping her locked down are these mutant variants and you zombie anti-vaxxers, and you've got to be, you know, they can't do anything about the variants, but boy, they can come after you. This is the hatred that is building. As these people get vaccinated, they're still insecure. They still don't have their freedom. Why do they not have their freedom? Well, because the WHO and Fauci are saying, well, you can't have any immunity if these other people don't get their vaccines, because your vaccine doesn't protect you. Their vaccine protects you. And they can't think through that. They can't think critically or deductively. Right. So she says, I will be masked up for many, many years. There are just too many unknowns. Well, now she really doesn't know what's going on, does she? Really does not know. Lena Pearl, a licensed clinical psychologist, said the pandemic has, quote, collectively given everyone almost like an anxiety disorder. I said this a year ago. I said, look at these people. They are embracing this. They're loving it. They're washing their hands and rubbing this alcohol stuff, which we later found out. Cancer-causing benzene, constantly rubbing it on their hands. I mean, you put it on once or twice, you're fine. But if you're constantly, obsessively doing that, you know, these people are either washing their hands or rubbing benzene on their hands. You are OCD. I said this over a year ago. I said, we have become an OCD nation. And now as time has drug on, we have now added to that psychological sickness, we've now added agoraphobia. Fear of open places. She said, it's collectively given everyone almost like an anxiety disorder. She called the inclination to wear a mask, the psychologist did, this licensed clinical psychologist, called the inclination to wear a mask after it's no longer medically necessary a, quote, safety behavior. That's what they're cultivating. Give up your liberty behavior for safety behavior. They can alleviate some people's anxieties. Quote, it's no different than having a drink or taking a drug. And we've seen a lot of that happening over this last year, haven't we? Or running, or any other number of ways that we kind of manage our anxiety. But you can get disconnected from the actual danger. And you can keep doing this stuff ritually when there is no danger. One thing we do naturally is to look at other people's faces, she said, to gauge how anxious you should be in a given situation. Wearing a mask all the time has removed that, and that actually even heightens the anxiety. So you get people obsessive and compulsive about a virus that they can't see except on TV. Can't see the effects in your society. You don't know of anybody that's getting sick with this stuff, but they keep telling you that everybody's dying and it's the worst disease we've ever seen in the history of mankind because we've never done any of this kind of stuff before. And then you walk out and you're scared to death. You walk out and you see people on the street and they're all masked up. It reinforces that it's real. Not only that, but it keeps you from being able to see their face. And it creates anxiety. She said, when somebody smiles at you on the street, for example, it's a way of modulating and regulating our own nervous system. Don't underestimate the loss of that connection. Don't underestimate what Fauci and these people are deliberately doing to our children by masking that off at a very young age. not allowing them to connect emotionally with people. And this is going on now for over a year. You think about what they're doing in the schools, putting these kids in isolation, separating their desks, telling them to be afraid of all the other children because all the other children could potentially kill them, letting them not see smiles, letting them not see faces, keeping them isolated. This is beyond, not just beyond freedom and dignity, but it's beyond even B.F. Skinner's abuse of his own children. This science is behavioral science. Another person says that she was diagnosed with agoraphobia before the pandemic, and it's only worsened since she's been given an actual reason to fear going into public places. See, you're not paranoid if it's real, but no, it's not real, so you're even hyper paranoid. She dislikes wearing a mask, she says, but you know, she's afraid of open spaces and being out there. She was before. Now this is really enforced. She says, I don't like wearing a mask. Quote, I get winded very quickly because of my heart issue. And it's very difficult for me to breathe with a mask, but I will not take it off. You know, I had to go to the dentist a year ago, and it was some dental work that I'd already paid for. And they didn't want to let me in because I wouldn't wear a mask. And I said, you're not going to let me in. You know that you can't work on my mouth while I'm wearing a mask, right? So I'm going to be unmasked the entire time I'm there. And I'll stay outside until you're ready for me, and then I'll walk to the chair. How about that? They were very reluctant to do that. Did not want to let me do that. And I said, okay, well, here's the other thing. I said, I have to. I have a heart condition, and so I can't deprive myself of oxygen. That's a real thing. And so that's the truth, and both the heart condition and the fact that if you don't want a heart condition, you don't deprive yourself of oxygen. That creates heart conditions. That's another thing we're doing to our children, doing to athletes when we tell them you got to mask up while you're outside exercising. And so I said, she kind of sarcastically says, is that just you or is that all heart patients? I said, you going to let me in or not? Or do I need to sue you for this and get my money back? Just unbelievable what's going on with these people. They eventually did let me in. So she went in and talked to the doctor, and the doctor said, okay. Wasn't that nice of them to make an exception for a crank like me? The NIH has published a study showing that not only are masks useless, but they're actually dangerous to your health. And, of course, Twitter has been banning people who post it. This was sent to me by a listener. They suspended accounts of several people who talked about this report, published by the NIH, Fauci's organization. The grounds cited were that the posts were, quote, violating the policy on spreading misinformation, misleading and potentially harmful information relating to COVID-19. So what happened to the excuse that those arguing against masks were not following the science? This is the Stanford study published at the National Institute of Health.gov. And essentially, it's an individual who is working for the National Center for Biotechnological Information published this. The NCBI is a branch of the National Institute for Health, published on their site, and yet you can get suspended, even banned, for posting that NIH study done at Stanford under the auspices of the National Center for Biotechnological Information. Study's author was Baruch Weinschelboim, I guess is how you pronounce it. It was, I think, a meta-study because in it he cites 67 scholars, doctors, scientists, and other studies to support his conclusion. So this was a meta-study. And that's a valid thing to look at, to pull through the data from a lot of independent different studies. I've talked about how last August you had Duke University saying, well, you know, we did our own tests, and guess what? These masks, all of them, whether it's an N95 or whether it is a bandana that you improvised, all of them, well, even if they're effective temporarily at blocking the particles, this is what they like to say. You can talk about the fact that even the N95 mask is ludicrous to think that's going to stop a virus particle. But they will say, yeah, but most of the virus particles don't go out just by themselves. They're attached to saliva. So this stops the saliva. Well, as Duke University pointed out in their study, what it does is it creates jets around the edges. And those jets and the small areas that are there, it actually makes it go further and stay airborne longer. But there were other studies. The 2002 study that I've talked about, I don't know if that was part of his meta study here. The 2002 study that was done in Australia about the N95 surgical masks, the medical masks that were worn by people. They said if you wear this for more than 20 minutes, the mask gets completely saturated with your spittle. And so then after it's saturated and you are talking and that pressure pushes it out and makes smaller particles which travel farther and stay airborne longer. That's the way it works. In other words, it does not work. But what it does do is it deprives you of oxygen and increases the CO2, and it keeps bacteria close to your face. All of these are negative to your health. The data suggests both medical and non-medical face masks are ineffective to block human-to-human transmission of viral and infectious disease, including COVID-19. And they talk about the fact that the efficacy of face masks, that the virus is 1,000 times smaller than the openings in these masks, as one of the scientists pointed out. It's kind of like putting up a chain link fence because you want to keep out mosquitoes. The National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, that certifies the N95 masks, said that it promotes the developing and progression of existing chronic disease. For example, the ischemic heart disease caused by hypoxic damage to the myocardium is the most common form of cardiovascular disease, and that's what I was trying to explain to the dental technician. Hypoxia is low oxygen. Hypercapnia is the increase of CO2. But if you deprive your body of oxygen, that damages your heart. The number one cause of death worldwide, that's actually 44% of all non-communicable diseases, is based on this, which is exacerbated by depriving people of oxygen. Hypoxia also plays an important role in cancer. Cellular hypoxia is a strong mechanistic feature in promoting cancer. Most solid tumors present some degree of hypoxia. With respect to mental health, global estimates show that COVID-19 will cause a catastrophic situation with collateral psychological damage due to quarantine, lockdowns, unemployment, economic collapse, social isolation, violence, and suicides. Do you think that Fauci would ever admit that some of these mass shootings might have been brought on, exacerbated by the psychological damage that he's done to people with his lockdown? I mean, we know that the suicides and abuse and violence and all that, but even the mass shootings are tied to that. So you have substantial physiological and psychological effects. Hypoxia, hypercapnia, shortness of breath, increased acidity and toxicity, activation of fear and stress response, a rise in stress hormones, immunosuppression, fatigue, headaches, decline in cognitive performance, predisposition for viral and infectious illnesses, chronic stress, anxiety, depression. Do we need to go on? This is why Twitter doesn't want you to see this paper. Long-term consequences of wearing face masks are health deterioration and developing and progression of chronic diseases, including premature death. So, with all of that, this is obviously why the Michigan Health Department, with the blessings of Governor Whitmer, are bragging about having children now between the ages of from 2 to 4 wearing masks to, quote, protect the state's residents. We're going to do this to our kids out of our own fear. Even worse than that, what she had to say sounded exactly like what Doug Ford was saying in Ontario, when over the weekend he said, we have the most stringent regulations anywhere in North America. She says, these are the strongest public health orders in the Midwest. We're even going to make kids 2 years old wear masks everywhere. This is the way these people, these tyrants, think. They brag about their tyrannical dictates and what they're doing, even to children. They brag about it. They boast about it. This is how disgusting and defiled these people are. And that's why you're not going to be able to reason with them. That's why they're never going to give this back to you. They're proud of it. They boast about it. They brag. We have the toughest restrictions in the Midwest. We have the toughest restrictions in North America. And we're going to send the police around to randomly pull you over, said Doug Ford. We'll be expanding the mask rule to children ages 2 to 4 in Michigan. And it requires a good faith effort to ensure that these children wear masks while in gatherings at child care facilities or camps. In other words, we want you people to, just like Doug Ford called out the police on people, you have Whitmer calling out all the people in child care. You ride these two-year-olds and you make sure they don't take their mask off. Just absolutely unbelievable what we're seeing here. In addition to all the other things, you know, rebreathing contaminated air, high bacterial and toxic particle concentrations, but it is the psychological damage that they're doing to these poor children. Scaring them to death, isolating them, keeping them from having any, they have this, I don't even know what it's going to be like. We've never had this done to a generation of children before, what we're doing. But of course, we don't care about child abuse. We have, for the pedophiles, we have a very short statute of limitations because, you know, these people who are writing our laws don't want to go to jail for being pedophiles, so they make a very short statute of limitations. We grind up our children for medical research, for vaccine production. We have cannibalism as medicine. And we abuse them out of our own paranoia. Make them wear masks, to vaccinate them, even when Fauci and his statistical liars can't even make a case for it even affecting them. We will do it out of our own fear. And let me tell you, if they're going to do it to the kids, they're going to do it to you. And I still hold to the time frame of this fall. Will Jones writes on Zero Hedge, if lockdowns are needed, why did more people die in states that locked down than those that didn't? Well, I think there's two answers to that. It's not his answers. I'll tell you what my answers are. Number one, I think it's masks, because I think they're very, very unhealthy, and I think they exacerbate our health conditions. Number two, data manipulation. It's just this, I think it's the real effects are masks making people sick that should not be sick, and data manipulation. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back with more information about vaccines, about the riots. And Maxine Waters is something of a riot herself, both as a joke and as incitement. We'll talk about politicians and other actors, kind of like Matt McConaughey, who's doing that. And we're going to have in the third hour, we're going to be interviewing Nick Cole, an author of a very popular science fiction series, Galaxy's Edge. The subtitle of that is The Galaxy is a Dumpster Fire. So you can kind of see where he's going with all of this. It's kind of where our society is. And you had the admissions from the Hollywood Reporter talking about how Disney and other studio executives were talking about the quotas that they were setting up, the kinds of their values and how they were pushing this out, and how they did not want to have a certain type of programming. And he said, you know, I can confirm this. I was told because The Galaxy's Edge is a whole series of science fiction books, kind of like military sci-fi type of thing. Sound like a Star Wars type of deal. And Travis is a big fan of Galaxy's Edge, has been for years. But what got our attention was he said, yeah, I know this is how the Hollywood studios are. And he had a lot to say about the Hollywood studios. So we're going to talk about the Hollywood system there because he's not just a writer, but he also works in and around Hollywood. I'm sure he'll be working less now. But he said, I had somebody, as they were looking at this very popular series, said, we're not interested in white Christian trash. And he said, there's nothing in our books about whites or Christians, but they were talking about our audience. And so we're going to talk to him about that in the third hour. We'll be right back. Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. You know, we had Madonna over the weekend put out a video talking about how gun control is the vaccination that America needs most. And I spare you from watching the video, so you can thank me later for that. Madonna, who has made a career out of depravity and controversy, not out of her musical ability. And she is standing on stage, not wearing a mask, but the dancers next to her are wearing bandanas, not N95 masks. They're wearing bandanas and carrying rifles. She is kind of joining from the other side. She's joining with Fauci. Isn't it interesting how the people pushing vaccines and mandate passports on us are also pushing gun control? It's almost like their mindset is that they hate liberty and they love controlling other people, isn't it? Toward the end of the video, she looks at the camera and says, "Beware of this new vaccination for America to keep us all alive. It's going to keep us all safe. It's called gun control, okay? It's called gun safety, all right?" She added that the new vaccination should be mandatory. So she wants mandatory vaccines, mandatory gun control. You know, the thing is that you might want to try to give me a shot with a genetic code, but I also have something that shoots lead. So we'll have that discussion later if we have to. I hope we don't get to that point. But these people are not going to be, they're not going to accept any kind of rational argument. There's nothing rational about what they're trying to do. Talking about other celebrities, even though France is trying to pretend that there's now a fourth wave, they're saying that they're going to have the Cannes Film Festival for vaccinated travelers. And that's kind of a theme that we're seeing with the Oscars. They're now setting this thing up to be a global event so that people don't have to travel, you know, even these actors. Because maybe a lot of the actors don't want to get their vaccines to travel. I don't know. Or maybe they're just so afraid that they're afraid to travel even with their vaccines. As I was saying before, we're willing to do whatever we need to out of our own paranoia, fear, our own psychoses. We will throw our children on the bus. And this is characteristic of a society that God destroys. I always think about Carthage when I look at the way that we treat our children. Carthage, where you had the Tophets, the big funeral piles, where they would sacrifice their children. You know, all the Phoenicians throughout the area of Israel, or the Palestinian area, wherever you call it, that area there, where the Philistines were, they were known for child sacrifice to Moloch. It was a way that they achieved prosperity. After they would have their Madonna-like sexual rituals, that they would worship Asherah, they would wind up with a lot of unwanted pregnancies. And so they would... They were told that if they sacrificed their child by putting them on this superheated idol, they would get these metal idols, and they would have had an outstretched arms, and they would take their children and put them on this, basically just fry their kids on that surface. They called it passing their children through the fire. Had a lot of Israelites who bought into that pagan child sacrifice. But it's something that is pretty prevalent in pagan religions. They had a different way of doing it with the Aztecs, different way of killing people and children, but they did it nevertheless for prosperity, always. And that's one of the rationales and justifications that's used by Planned Parenthood. And then we have other things that we do, you know, to give us long life. We use the blood of children, or we put out orders from the National Institute of Health and the FDA for Planned Parenthood to provide certain organs that are fresh, not frozen, from the babies that they rip apart. Make sure you rip them apart in this particular way so that you can preserve this particular organ, because we want it fresh, not frozen, and don't rip that up. Rip up the other parts of the baby. That's where we are as a society. And you know, God told the Israelites to wipe out every single one of them. And then when they didn't do it, he got the Romans to do it later. He had Cato, who said one thing, at the end of every speech, one thing, Carthage must be destroyed. And they did destroy Carthage. One of the sites of this, that Phoenician culture that was there. That's really what's happening to us, folks. This is, it's not just abortion, it's so many different aspects of our society. If God does not judge us, as some have said, he owes Sodom and Gomorrah an apology. What is really going on is that the interests of children are being subsumed to the interests of adults, writes conservativewoman.co.uk. Because the adults are worried, the children have to undergo certain treatments. A vaccination is medication for the immune system, said Dr. Mike Yaden, former CEO of Pfizer. It isn't a placebo, it does something. What it does, it's too early to say. But should youthful developing immune systems be medicated with an under-researched, data-deprived medication? It's not an exaggeration to consider these vaccines as experimental drugs. These trials are live. And again, even a two-year study, epidemiological study, to determine safety and efficacy was widely regarded by many people who at a World Health meeting before all this began, as the two-year period was regarded as inadequate. So what did Trump do? He cut it to 2 months, demanding that you do it faster and faster, which is exactly what Fauci wanted.
Well, I don't know. That's pretty tough. I guess we could do that. Yeah, Mr. President.
Exactly what. And Trump strutted around like Mussolini as he did that. But the attitude of the government and so much of the population is anything but normal. So let's take a look at the VAERS system. I've talked about this many times. You know, we had the first time this came out. We said, look at this. And that was a few weeks ago. We've had as many people reported as deaths into the Vaccine Adverse Effects Recording System, VAERS, Anyway, the VAERS system run by the CDC. We've had as many people reported in less than 3 months, I said, as they did in the previous 10 years combined. And then we got another week's worth of data. And it was as many people in one quarter as they had in the previous 11 years combined. So let me put this to you in another way. Here's the chart. Take a look at this chart. That's what you see there, the number of vaccine deaths reported into the VAERS system run by the CDC. And that goes back to 1990 there on the left. And so you see that it's pretty much stable. There's a little bit of variation there, but it's pretty stable until you see that spike. And you know what that spike is? That's our COVID vaccines, up by 6,000% from the year earlier, more than the last 11 years combined. And so when we look at this, it turns out that it's not just Johnson & Johnson that has a blood clot issue here in the United States. And of course, AstraZeneca's blood clot issue was widely reported in Europe. But in the United States, they did not clear AstraZeneca yet. So in the United States, we have Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. In Europe, they also have AstraZeneca, and they have more people who have been injured with it. But AstraZeneca was well documented in terms of blood clots. We have the pause that's now going on with Johnson & Johnson. We're told that it was simply six people that had blood clot issues, and only one person died. And look at this. We've given this to 7 million people, and on and on. And I said, this is a head fake. Look at what happened to people. 4 different states, 4 different clinics shut down because they had more than 4 dozen people who immediately took ill with a Johnson & Johnson. Within days, they came out and said, out of an abundance of caution, we're trying to go the extra mile and pause this until we can determine what happened to 6 people. Forget the 4 dozen. They direct you to something completely different. But let's stay on the blood clot issue. What they're not telling you, but what is in the VAERS database, is that the blood clot issue is there for every one of these COVID vaccines. It's there for Pfizer. It's there for Moderna, not just for Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca. And of course, AstraZeneca doesn't show up in the VAERS data because that's a U.S. database. April 8th, a total of 68,347 total adverse events as of April the 8th. 2,602 deaths. Of those deaths reported, listen to this. Let me ask the coincidence theorists who all just say, oh, this is just a coincidence that these people died. You know, if you get a positive COVID test after they magnify the viral debris in your system by a factor of 1 trillion to the 40th power, the cycle threshold of 40, if you are tested positive with a PCR test for COVID and you die within 29 days, you died from COVID. Doesn't matter what killed you. But if you die within just a few hours of getting a vaccine, it's just a coincidence. You understand? So, of the 2,602 deaths reported as of April the 8th, 27% of the deaths occurred within 48 hours of vaccination. 19% of the deaths occurred within 24 hours. And 41% occurred in people who became ill within 48 hours of being vaccinated. Okay, so total that up, that is 87% of the deaths happened to people who got sick or who died within 48 hours, within 24 hours, or who got very ill within 48 hours and then subsequently died. 87% of these deaths happened to people immediately after this. It is not a coincidence. 19% of the deaths were related to cardiac disorders. The average age of the people who died was 77. The youngest death was an 18-year-old. As of April the 8th, 408 pregnant women had adverse effects, including 114 miscarriages. 678 cases of Bell's palsy reported. Remember, these are mostly Pfizer vaccine. 60% of the vaccines are Pfizer. And about 40% are Moderna. Johnson & Johnson is a very small percentage of this because they just started. So again, this is to distract attention away from Pfizer and Moderna. It's to distract attention away from the immediate effects that happened with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and to focus on something that they said was very rare. But they even lied about that. It's not six people. It's 795 cases of people having blood clot issues. There were 400 blood clot issues with Pfizer, 337 blood clot issues with Moderna, and 56 blood clot issues with Johnson & Johnson. Yet you hear this lying piece of filth, Fauci, constantly going on in the narrative that's being pushed to us by all the mainstream media. Well, look, this is only six people. You also have 77 reported cases of Guillain-Barré, and you have 20,021 cases of anaphylaxis shock. 47% of those attributed to Pfizer, 46% to Moderna, 7% to Johnson & Johnson. Last Tuesday, a week ago, Peter Marks, director of the Center for Biologics Evaluation Research at the FDA, said on a call with reporters that there had been no reported cases of cerebral venous sinus thrombosis with the blood platelets. But his statement was in contradiction of numerous news reports. We had way more than that already reported. And it contradicted this information from the FDA's vaccine adverse event reporting system. He flat out lied to people because they know that the mainstream media is not going to report this data. They know that Twitter, Facebook, social media, Google will punish people that report this, like me. VAERS yielded a total of 795 reports for all three vaccines. This is of blood coagulation disorders. 795 reports for all three vaccines from December the 14th through April the 1st. And we don't even have AstraZeneca here. That's Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. A study released today by Oxford University found the number of people who developed this these particular blood clots, they called them CVST, after COVID vaccines was about the same for Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and Johnson & Johnson is not approved for use in the EU. Doesn't matter. It's all of these. Yeah, thousands of reports of menstrual irregularities and reproductive dysfunction following COVID vaccines. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of anecdotal reports of people saying, I didn't get it, but everybody that I work with did. And I did get the vaccine, but everybody that I work with did. And now I've had disruption. Say some of the reports of menstrual issues. I didn't have any. I don't have that issue. I'm postmenopausal here. But no, seriously, you look at that. Is that not, you know, we have a lot of reports of women working in close coordination with each other. Somehow they their cycles are synchronized. Is that unbelievable that something like that could happen? No. Will it be investigated by these people? No. Absolutely not. Absolutely. They won't admit to it, even when it's direct. They won't admit that it's anything other than a coincidence that people are 87% of the people that die out of the nearly 3,000 that they've got there. They won't admit that when 87% of the people who die either died within 24 hours, 48 hours, or they became very sick and hospitalized and subsequently died, but that sickness came on them within 48 hours. When it's that immediate, they still call it a coincidence. When it is exponentially higher than more than a decade worth of these adverse effects, they look the other way. Johnson & Johnson is facing more scrutiny after the CEO's $30 million payday. This is why this is happening. It's just rampant corruption, cronyism. The way that Fauci has pushed these Gilead drugs, like Gilead, like remdesivir, continuously for AIDS, for Ebola, then pushing it and creating his own new standard for effectiveness, and then always the standard for therapeutics was, does it cure anybody? He says, no. They got better 30% faster, and now that's the standard of care. They sold billions to Europe. And then the reports came out yet again, because we had reports before Fauci got it taken down from the World Health Organization that it was totally ineffective. And so he came up with his own methods to do this. This is absolute corruption. And it ought to make you as mad as it does me to see that the connections between Washington and these people, the connections with the Trump administration, Alex Azar from Eli Lilly put in as the head of Health and Human Services by Donald Trump to assuage the fears after a big donation. You know, he brought in Robert Kennedy Jr. to talk about vaccines. Trump knew. Just like the people at InfoWars knew where this was all headed to and joined him rather than telling you the truth. They knew about this. He brought in RFK Jr. And RFK Jr. said, yeah, really hit the fan. And there was a massive donation made to Trump and his campaign. And then you wound up with Eli Lilly's CEO as head of the of Health and Human Services. Trump's FDA guy, Scott Gottlieb, is now on the board of Pfizer. showered them with more money than they've ever had showered on them before for a product for which they have no liability. And Trump twisting the arms of the FDA, demanding that they approve emergency use today or you're fired. Remember that when that happened over the fall? None of that made any difference to the MAGA cult. None of it. They refused to believe that it was headed to where we see it is right now. And so you've got Johnson & Johnson giving their CEO $30 million. These are the people, by the way, some of the biggest drug pushers. The opioid epidemic, they were a bigger player in that than Purdue Pharmaceutical and the Sackler family. They were actually making the product that Purdue and Sackler were pushing out there, and they were pushing their own stuff as well. But, of course, these pharmaceutical companies like Sackler and Johnson & Johnson, they just get a slap on the wrist. They don't suffer the civil asset forfeiture. They don't go to jail for any of this stuff. And so as we talk about this situation with the menstrual cycles and the connection with all this, I find this story to be very interesting. A Canadian gym refuses new membership to people who've had the vaccine due to fear over side effects. We've had so many people, so many stories of people who get the vaccine. They were never sick for the entire year. They get the vaccine, they immediately get sick, and they pass that sickness on to the rest of their family as well. Remember the story of the guy who was in his late 50s, on death's door now because of respiratory illness after he got the vaccination? He was very excited to get it. Hadn't gotten sick all year. He was paranoid. He was staying safe and everything. And he got it and then gave it to all of his family as well. So this gym owner is saying, in Canada, put a notice on its website that it will refuse new membership applications to those who have received the mRNA vaccines. He said, because they have unknown health effects. And jabs like this are not covered in our liability policy. So, you know, if you want to sign up as an unpaid volunteer in an experiment, please be advised to ensure the safety of ourselves and our businesses and our existing members. Flow Academy will not be accepting any applications for membership from anyone who's received any of the vaccine options for COVID-19. This decision was made after discussion with other health and wellness and fitness-related facilities across Canada, both public and private, as well as with our liability insurance companies. And so I think that's a very interesting way to approach this. Perhaps we should start excluding the vaccinated instead of the other way around. There's actually a real rationale for that, a real scientific, health-based rationale to exclude these people who have signed up as human guinea pigs to not be around us. A leaked PowerPoint from Saskatchewan government suggests sedating the disabled in order to give them a COVID shot without consent. And that video that came out last week, I did not play it because I just found it to be disturbing. It was a lot of people who listened to the broadcast, a lot of screaming and wailing from these poor individuals who are mentally disabled, being given this vaccine without informed consent, and the people who care for them being content to let that happen. Some people do not get flu shots, they said, even with the most creative approaches. This is why I knew it was a line. I said this a year ago. I said, we've seen how creative Fauci and the CDC can be with statistics to try to lie people into getting their flu shots on an annual basis. And they're doing exactly the same thing. And they say, you know, a lot of people don't get flu shots even with creative approaches, the most creative approaches, even with accessible health education and amazing emotional support provided from their preferred people simply because the fear of needles is so high. No, I'm not afraid of needles. I'm afraid of what's in them. These individuals are often the ones who also need to get to a hospital for dental work. Oh, yeah, there you go, under general anesthesia. And my only faint hope for these individuals is to be immunized is that by the time their next hospital dental date comes up, we may be able to request a vaccine dose be given at the same time. Let me tell you something. If this is going to be a requirement for getting dental health care, as I said before, ain't going to happen. I've known people, a friend at church who actually pulled out his own teeth. I would do that before I would get a vaccine as a condition of dental care. And there's going to be a lot of dentists who really understand what's going on as well. And they're going to have, if they want it, patients who are going to be willing, who are looking for a dentist who will treat them if they didn't get the vaccine. So we could create another society if we want to, but it's going to be difficult for us to communicate because the gatekeepers have funneled us into the system that they control. They don't want us communicating with each other. So one last article here before we move into what's going on with riots. Actually, two articles. We have China, one of the world's best vaccination... Chile. The other article is about China. Chile, one of the world's best vaccination rates. But COVID is surging there anyway. And I wonder, because I reported that there were three countries that were being blackmailed by Pfizer, saying it's not enough that you give us immunity for the disease, for the vaccine itself. You have to also give us legal immunity for any manufacturing defects, like we're seeing happening at the Johnson & Johnson facilities, that kind of negligence. So it's not just that you give us immunity for creating an experimental, untested vaccine, but you have to give us immunity for the things that businesses are always sued for, and that is negligence. Negligence of manufacturing, negligence of shipping. And then they said, they made the unusual statement, and by the way, we demand in Argentina and Brazil and a third unnamed country, we demand that you set up foreign bank accounts outside of your country so we can get to that money in case something happens. What is going on with that? If they have immunity for all these other things and they are still concerned about that, what does that tell you? It tells me several things. Number one, these vaccines that have to be kept at ridiculously low temperatures may not just become ineffective, they may become dangerous when they're not refrigerated properly. We've seen that with the MMR vaccine in Samoa in 2018. And so that's one issue. The other issue is that they may be knowingly doing something that is so criminal that people would essentially come after them anyway, even though the government gives them immunity. That's why they want these foreign bank accounts. And also demanded sovereign real estate, things like embassies, as collateral as well. So maybe Chile was one of these countries, because Chile is using the Pfizer vaccine. And yet they're seeing COVID surging there. Again, people getting the vaccine and then getting sick, at least testing positive, because you're injecting them with the viral fragments that you're also testing for and magnifying by a factor of a trillion. I cannot stress this enough. For most countries, vaccines are not going to stop this wave of the pandemic. And this is now going through all the different globalist organizations. China is now saying that their Sinovac is not working. And so they are saying, well, maybe we need to approve the Pfizer vaccine. Here's the news. The Pfizer vaccine is not working either. And read what's going on in Chile. And it was in China. You had the scientist a few weeks ago saying, this is the most dangerous vaccine on the market. All these effects and everything. The next day, you know, he is kowtowing and begging and a retraction. That's not true. I was misunderstood. I was misquoted. Then you had another scientist say it was absolutely ineffective. And now they're contracting with Pfizer. And all this is happening as Johnson & Johnson suffers another setback as the FDA shuts down yet another one of their production facilities that were rushed into production. Not going to worry about what's happening. Let's take a quick look at the riots. And Maxine Waters, who in and of herself is something of a riot. Not just incitement, but also in terms of comic relief. Maxine Waters had the audacity to demand a special police motorcade to take her to an anti-police event where she called on people to get more confrontational after days of violence. And then they had a drive-by shooting of National Guard who were fortunately not hit, but the shattering glass injured two of the people in the car. But she demanded the police give her police protection. How typical. And then, as she encouraged the rioters, as I pointed out yesterday, get more confrontational, stay on the street, get more active after they've been rioting for several days. We've got to get more confrontational. We got to make sure that they know that we mean business. And so then a drive-by shooting. The judge, as Babylon Bee puts it, in a satire, and it's hard to do a satire on Maxine Waters. She is a walking satire. in the Babylon Bee satire, judge asks the jurors to disregard Maxine Waters as she pours gasoline on their heads. he says to them, as the jury, you are charged to be fair and impartial. Please pay no attention to the fact that you're just being soaked with gasoline. Please also ignore that Representative Waters is now standing behind you trying to light a match. In addition, please disregard the crowd of masked Antifa holding pitchforks right outside the door. Maxine Waters has made it very clear to the jury that they must issue a guilty verdict, and if they don't want to be doxxed, threatened, fired from their jobs, or peacefully set on fire. Biden also weighed in, suggesting that he might pack the jury with members to ensure the correct verdict. Yeah, that's right. We'll pack the jury. Now, this is not satire. This is actually something that really happened. The judge in this trial of Derek Chauvin says that her comments may actually be grounds for appeal. Think about this. Maxine Waters may have given Derek Chauvin a get-out-of-jail-free card with her antics. He says, as the you had the defense moved for mistrial yesterday over recent publicity, including, they said, TV shows, as well as comments by Maxine Waters, the judge, Nelson, noted that the trial had not only been in the news, but recently included, Nelson, the defense attorney, noted that the trial had not only been in the news, but recently included in two fictional TV shows, and what he described as threats against the sanctity of the jury process by Waters over the weekend. The judge, Cahill, said that he was aware of Waters' comments about, quote, the unacceptability of anything less than a murder conviction and talk about being confrontational. And he went on to say, I wish elected officials would stop talking about this case, especially in a manner that is disrespectful to the rule of law and to the judicial branch and our function. He then added, I think if they want to give their opinions, they should do so in a respectful and in a manner that is consistent with their oath to the Constitution to respect a co-equal branch of government. Their failure to do so, I think, is abhorrent. But I don't think it's prejudiced us with additional material that would prejudice this jury, adding that a congresswoman's opinion really doesn't matter a whole lot, especially when that congresswoman is Maxine Waters. Nah, that's my addition to that. In response, Waters, leaving the House floor, told reporters, the judge says my words don't matter. That's going to be her get-out-of-jail card, right? I guess. Pressed later on the judge comments that her remarks could be grounds for an appeal, she says, oh, no, no, they didn't. When pressed further, she said, the devil made me do it. every time I see Maxine Waters, I think of Flip Wilson. Geraldine instead of Maxine, right? Very soon, I'll be introducing a resolution to expel Maxine Waters from Congress, wrote Marjorie Taylor Greene, for her continual incitement of violence on innocent American people. Representative Waters is a danger to our society. She said the California congresswoman invited Black Lives Matter domestic terrorists to fire gunshots at National Guardsmen in Minnesota. As a sitting U.S. congresswoman, Maxine Waters threatened a jury, demanding a guilty verdict, threatened violence if Chauvin is found not guilty. This is also an abuse of power. I'm just waiting for, and I don't know why they haven't, you know, they had at the former house of one of the defense witnesses that they don't want to give out where this guy lives. They put pig's blood all over the place and had a pig's head and things like that. I'm surprised that they haven't come after Derek Chauvin, calling him a male chauvinist pig. Because, you know, that's the thing that was, you know, today you hear racist, sexist, homophobic, and, you know, at everybody. That's what they used to throw at everybody back when I was younger, male chauvinist pig. But I'm sure that if they think of it, they will they will use it. Lauren Boebert of Colorado. Why is Maxine Waters traveling to a different state trying to incite a riot? What good can come from this? Andy Biggs of Arizona. The radical left don't care if your towns are burning. They don't care if there's violence in your street or if the police are too defunded to defend their communities. As long as the left appeases their anti-American base, their job is done. And again, the judge calling Maxine Waters' behavior abhorrent. McCarthy, who is the minority leader, said Maxine Waters is inciting violence in Minneapolis just as she has incited it in the past. And if Speaker Pelosi doesn't act against this dangerous rhetoric, I will bring action this week. Here's what Jonathan Turley had to say. And I found it interesting because what he did was he said that, as Zero Hedge put it, she may have hoisted herself by her own petard. You know, Maxine Waters is part of the group that is trying to, has brought up a civil lawsuit against President Trump for incitement at Capitol 6. And he says that she would call these people in the midst of a riot, you know, because they're rioting before and rioting after the remarks, that she would call for these people to get more confrontational. He says, the statement is ironic since Waters is one of the House members currently suing former President Trump and others for inciting violence on the mall. It's not actually ironic. It's hypocritical. It'd be ironic if it happened to her without her knowledge. But it's since she's doing it, it's hypocritical. But anyway, the fight for their votes, he said, was that they tried to get an actual criminal incitement, but they couldn't do it. And he said, and there's a reason that they didn't get it. He said, an actual criminal case would lead to rejection of not just the charge, but the basis for the Trump impeachment, the second one. In the Supreme Court decision, Brandenburg versus Ohio, Jonathan Turley says that the Supreme Court stressed that even advocacy of the use of force or of law violation is protected unless it is imminent. Trump did not call for the use of force, but actually told people to protest, quote, peacefully and to, quote, cheer on their allies in Congress. After violence erupted, he later told his supporters to respect and to obey the Capitol Police. He said the Supreme Court in 2011 also ruled in favor, 8-1 in favor, of the Westboro Baptist Church. That church is just a disgrace to Christians everywhere. And they do their protests of homosexual behavior by going to the funerals of American troops who have died. Like, how do you even make a connection to that? Anyway, he said this in the 8-1 decision. John Roberts said, quote, speech is powerful. It can stir people to action. It can move them to tears of both joy and sorrow, and as it did here, it can inflict great pain. On the facts before us, however, we cannot react to that pain by simply punishing the speaker. That's what the Supreme Court said. So as he points out that when they go for this lawsuit, they have Maxine Waters may have done a couple of things. She may have inadvertently given Derek Chauvin, according to the judge, a case, something of which on appeal he can get the conviction overturned if that is indeed what happens. And then secondly, she basically let President Trump off of their contrived hook. He said, in my view, the words of both Maxine Waters and of President Trump are political speech and should not be subject to criminal sanctions. However, you cannot selectively apply a free speech standard to some people and to some riots and to some protests and not apply them to others. Which brings us again back to the Capitol 6 thing. And this is a story by Glenn Greenwald. He was attacked. Again, Glenn Greenwald absolutely dislikes President Trump, no doubt about it. Dislikes his policies, has attacked his policies, is a liberal. Glenn Greenwald, however, does have a commitment to being an honest journalist. And he doesn't like it when he sees the mainstream media lying for their political agenda, blatantly lying about that. And so he has an op-ed piece on Substack. You can also see it on Zero Hedge. The media lied repeatedly about Officer Brian Sicknick's death. As a matter of fact, it's Maxine Waters was talking about that as well quite a bit. Oh, yeah, these people killed somebody. Well, no, they didn't. He said the media lied repeatedly about Officer Brian Sicknick's death, and they just got caught. because we just had the autopsy report come out. But here's what Glenn Greenwald talks about the sustained lies from the mainstream media, especially the New York Times, caught over and over again lying. He says it was crucial for liberal sectors of the media to invent and to disseminate a harrowing lie about how Officer Brian Sicknick died. That is because he is the only one they could claim was killed by pro-Trump protesters on January the 6th. So the New York Times, on January the 8th, published an emotionally gut-wrenching but complete fiction that never had any evidence that Officer Sicknick's skull was savagely bashed in with a fire extinguisher by a pro-Trump mob until he died. And just like the now discredited Russian bounty story, also unveiled by the New York Times, by cable outlets, and by other media platforms, they repeated this lie over and over again in the most emotionally manipulative way possible. The same way they sold us the pandemic lies. Anyway, going back to Glenn Greenwald, he said there were so many reasons to doubt this storyline from the start. Nobody on the record claimed that it happened. It's kind of like the sting that was put out by Steve Pachinik and Alex Jones, isn't it? The autopsy found no blunt trauma to the head. Sicknick's own family kept urging the press to stop spreading the story because he called them the night of January the 6th and told them that he was fine. Obviously inconsistent with the media's claim that he died by having his skull bashed in. And his own mother kept saying that she believed that he died of a stroke. Nevertheless, the New York Times and other media weaponized this story over and over again to depict the pro-Trump mob not just as violent, but barbaric and murderous. Because if Sicknick weren't murdered by them, then nobody was. Without Sicknick, the only persons killed were four Trump supporters, two who died of a heart attack, one from an amphetamine overdose, and the other, Ashley Babbitt, shot point blank in the neck by Capitol Police despite being unarmed. Glenn Greenwald is a very honest reporter. I really applaud him. We may have different agreements, different opinions about some issues, and we do. But boy, he's been scrupulously honest about all this. People who were trying to be journalists were smeared by Democrat Party loyalists who pretend to be journalists. They were accused as Sicknick truthers, as white nationalist sympathizers, as supporters of insurrection. For the crime of trying to determine the factual truth of what happened, my character was constantly impugned by these propagandistic worms, says Glenn Greenwald. He was attacked by these people because he saw this obvious lie and exposed it. Because one of the first people to highlight the journalistic truth here was former Trump official Darren Beatty of Revolver News, and one of the few people on television willing to host doubts about the official story was Tucker Carlson, any doubts about the false Sicknick story, no matter how well-grounded in truth, facts, reason, and evidence, were cast as fascism, as white supremacy, and those raising the questions were smeared as truthers, the usual dreary liberal insults for trying to coerce people into submitting to their lies. Because the truth usually prevails, at least ultimately, their lies yet again all came crashing down on their heads on Monday. The District of Columbia's chief medical examiner, earlier this morning, issued his official ruling in the Sicknick case, and it was so definitive that even the Washington Post, one of the media outlets that had pushed the multiple falsehoods, did not even bother to try to mask or to mitigate the stark conclusion it revealed. Headline from the Washington Post: Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who engaged rioters, suffered two strokes and died of natural causes, say officials. This definitive finding from the medical examiner not only rids us of the fire extinguisher lie, but also of the second theory to which these media outlets resorted once they had to face the reality that they'd spent weeks spreading an outright lie. Needless to say, they provided no real accountability or even acknowledgement for the fact that they did spread the fire extinguisher tale. Instead, they just seamlessly moved to their next evidence-free claim. They changed their story to claim that the pro-Trump protesters still murdered Sicknick, not with a fire extinguisher, but with bear spray, which video shows at least one protester using in his vicinity. The problem with the theory is that bear spray is not usually fatal, and the medical examiner's findings ruled out that possibility as well. The autopsy found no evidence that the 42-year-old officer suffered an allergic reaction to chemical irritants, said the Washington Post, as it said, our interview with Francisco Diaz, the medical examiner. Diaz said Sicknick suffered two strokes at the base of the brainstem caused by a clot in the artery that supplies blood to that area of the body. Diaz said he could not comment on whether Sicknick had a pre-existing medical condition, citing privacy laws. So Glenn Greenwald said, I will have much more to say about this story as it unfolds. A significant amount of media accountability is warranted, but if you're seeing why there is so much resentment and so many attacks on platforms like this one, Substack, that permit journalists to report and analyze facts and dissect media narratives without being constrained by liberal orthodoxies and pieties, while remaining immune from liberal pressure tactics, it's one of the few ways that real dissent to their lies and propaganda can be aired. And again, he puts another headline from what the New York Times had initially sold. He dreamed of being a police officer, then was killed by a pro-Trump mob. That's the way they put this out. Struck him in the head with a fire extinguisher. According to two law enforcement officials, with a bloody gash on his head, Sicknick was rushed to the hospital, placed on life support, and died. That's the lie. Glenn Greenwald says truth matters. Noble lies are never justified, no matter the cause, especially in journalism. Lying or recklessly spreading unproven theories to do it is their profit model. Any self-critique or accountability when they get caught doing this, their audience wants to be lied to. Their audience is grateful for it and would prefer that they not admit that they did it, so that their partisan interests will not be undermined. And let me just say, he's talking about the people on the left. He's talking about the mainstream media, New York Times. But this is just as true of the MAGA crowd and the people who were so excited about Steve Pachinik's lies. His absurd lies. His lies about the sting were as patently absurd from the very beginning, even more so than this Brian Sicknick story. The people wanted to hear it. And you had the media outlet. When I confronted Alex on that, and I went public with that, he did not want to pull that back. I said, you're going to destroy your credibility because it's not going to take very long for these people to find out that you're lying. But you know what? The people didn't care. Alex didn't pay a price for that. I did. Alex still has an audience. And he still has the lies and the money going. And it's because the audience wants to hear those lies. And they'll excuse it. I mean, he had Pachinik on well into February. He'll never stop having him on. Why? Because of profit. That is his profit motive. Spreading unproven theories is their profit model. Whether you're talking about the New York Times or you're talking about InfoWars. Either way. And their audiences, polarized enough to destroy this country, are eating it up. And they're still doing it with Michael Flynn. We're going to come back and we're going to talk to Nick Cole about, that's at 10:30. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break and we're going to talk a little bit more about gun control, as well as some politicians and other actors like Matt McConaughey. You know, he's leading in a recent poll. He's leading Greg Abbott. Well, I would not vote for Greg Abbott. I don't know that I would vote for Matt McConaughey. But we'll take a look at what's happening with that, as well as what's happening with the nonsense around the Oscars and lockdown. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
And an update to a story that I read, I think it was yesterday, flight attendant talking about kind of standing in the gap, helping an elderly man who did not want to wear, could not wear a mask, and kind of protecting him from his co-workers who wanted to go full Nazi on him. He also wrote this, and I'll just pass this along. He said, if you are harassed, if you are bullied, if you're intimidated or threatened by the lunatic diaper Nazis, make sure to go to their company website and complain about the threatening behavior, because the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And I think that's true whether we're talking about airlines or we're talking about restaurant chains or whatever. I mean, the restaurants that have thrown me out here, for the most part, I was trying to help small businesses stay in business. And it was now in this area, small businesses that were throwing me out. So it's the owner throwing you out, I let him know that I won't be coming back. That's my way to get squeaky with them. Another article here from another letter, rather, from Lawrence, talking about the interview I had last week with Arthur Pawlowski. He said, very powerful in every way. If you haven't watched this, and I'm really not very good with headlines, frankly. So that's a good article. Please try to pass that around. He had so much to say about living under communism, about the rise of communism that he's seeing in the West, and about how to resist this. And then he had a wonderful Christian testimony that how it changed his life, things that happened with his son. And he has been at the forefront of Christian persecution now for a couple of decades. Because as a street preacher, as somebody who was caring for the homeless, first they celebrated him. And then when they heard him talking about sin, they decided that they would persecute him severely. And so he's been severely persecuted before any of this COVID stuff started. So this is not his first rodeo. But Lawrence said, I remember the Solidarity Movement in the 1980s, living and working in New York at the time. I knew people from Poland. So I was learning more and more about the situation besides what the news was reporting. I wonder if the sheep in this country will ever get sick of the COVID foolishness and get fed up like the Polish people did. I'm not sure because, as your guest stated, Poland had many years of oppression. And there are still people that I know who think that if they get their shots, and if they do what they're told, everything will go back to normal. That is the problem. I've been telling everyone that I know that compliance will only get you more oppression. We've had it so good for so long in this country that many just can't believe that we're ruled by gangsters, masquerading elected servants who care nothing about the ones who voted them into the positions that they hold. That's right. They would rather, as Dante pointed out, they'd rather rule in hell than to serve in heaven. And they are so driven to dominate other people that they will continue to do that. Let's take a look. We're talking about martial law. Some disturbing things that have come out of Minneapolis. They had a curfew. They have a massive presence, a militarized presence. I mean, we're all under martial law with this national state of emergency executive order that began all this 402 days ago. But if you want to see what this is moving to, just take a look at what is happening in Minnesota, where you have National Guard look like they're dressed for Afghanistan or Iraq. And as curfew expired, very troubling video surfaced in social media of them pulling women out of the cars at gunpoint in full armor, pointing their weapons at these women, taking them over and arresting them. That kind of behavior, simply because they were out getting gas right after curfew. Here's the video. Very small young girl. Hands over her head, guns pointed at her. She has to go over, kneel down, keeping her hands on her head.
If you are in a vehicle, get out of your vehicle now, turn it off, get on the ground, you are under arrest.
Pointing his gun at people in the car. Flashlight. More people. This is America. This is America. Several women, not affiliated at all with the protests, attempting to gas up their vehicle apparently after the curfew, heavily armed soldiers surrounding their car. Soldiers ordered the women from the car, AR-15 rifles pointed at their heads. Not the Taliban, but innocent women in yoga pants, as Freethought Project points out. And one person on social media, on Twitter, said, "Whoever ordered this idiocy should be unceremoniously and summarily removed from office." Arresting people at a Minnesota gas station, pointing military-grade assault rifles in their faces is just outrageous. No elected official should ever get away with this. And I blame the soldiers. I blame the commanding officers for engaging in this as well. Because, you know, when the politicians tell you to do something, you're the one that is ultimately responsible when you follow their orders. It's you. It's you. You know what's right. You know what the Constitution is. And you know these people are no threat to you. To point a gun at them while you're all suited up in bulletproof vests, military uniforms, and helmets. Unbelievable. To have, anybody that's been around a gun, you don't point a gun at something that you don't want to shoot. And there's absolutely no reason for these people to point a gun at these. None whatsoever. That is above the, above and beyond. Mainstream media didn't even pick up the story. Because why? Well, because Trump is now out of office and it doesn't fit their narrative. You know, we got the fascist out of office, right? Now we got Biden in, and we don't want to point to any of that stuff. But the problem was always much bigger than Trump. He inherited the problem. He made the problem worse, but it's not going to be talked about now. Because last year, we were going to have a return to normalcy. What's happening in Minnesota, Portland, and Chicago right now would be on every news station, and would be the top topics on Twitter. But now that the Orange Man is gone, we can talk about cats again. One person said, "You're worried about police brutality? Did it ever occur to you that the police might be brutal when they enforce gun laws?" Gun laws, that's right. Yeah, Fauci, you heard that. I played that for you earlier. Yeah, the gun issue. Yeah, that's a health issue. Ah, you can't ignore the fact that that's a... Myself... As a public health person, I think you can't run away from that. That's right. No, he doesn't have the authority to do anything that he's doing. I mean, Fauci talking about gun control, it's almost as bad as, I don't know, the CDC talking about whether or not you can evict people who don't pay their mortgage and their rent. Yeah. These people are not constrained by the Constitution. They're not constrained by the law. They're not constrained by the task that their organization had. They didn't even pretend to be doing public health issues. They're way out of their lanes everywhere. Reason Magazine points out that the Indianapolis shooting, this is the one that happened around the Federal Reserve situation, shows the shortcoming of red flag laws. And again, this is a situation where this 19-year-old who went in and shot up a bunch of people that he worked with after he was fired, he had his mother call the police on him. The FBI had taken away his gun in 2020. She thought he was going to commit suicide by cop. In other words, going to get involved in a shooting. So he had just bought a shotgun. They came by and they took that away under the red flag laws. And then before he did this shooting, he purchased another rifle legally. So they didn't block him from doing anything. But even more so, when I talked about the red flag gun laws, I said, why would you red flag the gun and not the person? Either this person has some dangerous issues, right? I mean, don't show up and take the gun away from the person and then leave the situation. The thing that's dangerous is the person, not the gun. If the person is dangerous, the person can get a hatchet, the person can get a knife, the person can get an automobile and kill people with that. If the person is dangerous, the person can go get another gun, and he doesn't have to purchase it legally. He did purchase a second gun legally. But there's a vibrant black market that's out there. If the person is dangerous, do something about the person. Give them due process. But we don't need a red flag gun laws. We need to have due process. Meanwhile, the Sikh community, because several of the people that were killed there, that were working there, were Sikhs. They said there's no indication that he was necessarily targeting them other than the fact that they were co-workers there. But now they're pushing gun control after this Federal Express attack. Sikhs are known in their own country for carrying swords. They understand the importance of arms, I guess, but not here. Not here. So, frankly, I am sick and tired of victims who do that, and the families of victims who do that. The police officer who was shot in Boulder, Colorado, his father, said, don't use his death to push gun control. That would make him disgusted. Good for him. Good for him. Good man, good family. A law enforcement officer, however, not a good man, the one in Austin who was arrested, was out on bail. Out on bail for child rape. And then he shot and killed three people. As Freethought Project points out, this highlights the often low bail amounts and special privilege given to police officers after they've been caught preying on the most vulnerable in society. But I think that is certainly an aspect that we've seen over and over again. But it's also an aspect in general of our broken criminal, quote-unquote, justice system. As the Derek Chauvin verdict draws near, Facebook is clamping down, of course, a very heavy censorship. They call it moderation. Facebook will allow users to discuss the trial and to discuss the attorneys, but will remove content which violates their policies on hate speech, bullying, graphic violence, and incitement. Zero Hedge, that's a quote from Facebook. Zero Hedge reports, says that, well, no word on whether or not they'll remove clips of Maxine Waters inciting a mob. Does that qualify as content that would violate your hate speech, bullying, graphic violence, and incitement? Seems like it would check all of those. You know, the thing that we don't notice, for the most part, you know, we talk about all of the, again, we talk about the police shootings. As I said many times, you can play numbers games with the statistics. You can say that a higher percentage of black people are killed than white people with excessive use of force by the police. And that would be true. However, you can also play the other game, and you can say more white people are killed with excessive use of force by police officers, and that is also true. And the question is, why can't we come together to change something about the way the police departments are operating instead of making this something to divide us? And when you look at what Maxine Waters and others are doing in terms of playing the race card, what they're trying to do is to create, obviously, a race war. A good example of this has always been the fact that the left, who is pushing critical race theory, the left is pushing these riots, turns a blind eye to Planned Parenthood's black genocide. It's the name of a book that's been written, but you know, people have called it black genocide quite some time. And it is true, and they turn a blind eye to it. Planned Parenthood has just now, and it's kind of interesting because in the last year, Planned Parenthood in the U.S., so their Margaret Sanger, their eugenicist who decided that she was going to eradicate the black population, was very public about it, made no bones about it whatsoever. The same thing happened in the U.K. They had another eugenicist there that was part of their, kind of their equivalent of Planned Parenthood, Marie Stopes. And the organization used to be called Marie Stopes International. They changed it to MSI Reproductive Choices because she'd become such a controversial figure pushing eugenics. And of course, that's what Margaret Sanger was all about. And so now Planned Parenthood is finally trying to distance themselves from Margaret Sanger, but not distance themselves from her mission of black genocide. The people that the Democrats funneled $80 million to last year under the CARES Act. New York Times op-ed piece written by the current head of Planned Parenthood. I'm the head of Planned Parenthood. We're done making excuses for our founder. Oh, well, that took them a while, didn't it? Because they've been doing it since 1939. For 81 or 82 years, they have made excuses for Margaret Sanger. But they still embrace her values. She said, we must reckon with Margaret Sanger's association with white supremacist groups and eugenics. She said, up to now, Planned Parenthood, for 82 years, Planned Parenthood has failed to own the impact of our founder's actions. We have defended Sanger as a protector of bodily autonomy. These people do not believe my body, my choice when it comes to vaccines. You know that, right? Or masks, or lockdowns. Anyway, we defended her as a protector of bodily autonomy and self-determination while excusing her association with white supremacist groups and eugenics as an unfortunate product of her time. Until recently, we've hidden behind the assertion that her beliefs were the norm for people of her class and era. They maintain that Sanger remains an influential part of our history and will not be erased. Oh, well, that's interesting, because they want to erase the history of everybody else that was even just tangentially involved with anything that had to do with slavery. See, the difference is, most of these historical figures that they're now purging out of Western civilization were only tangentially involved at best with what was going on. I mean, they're now trying to get Jane Austen purged in the UK. And I saw that and I said, what is it? Oh, I know why. Was she operating a plantation? Did she own or sell slaves or anything? No, but she did write a book called Pride and Prejudice. She's obviously somebody pushing white pride, and she's obviously prejudiced, right? I wouldn't be surprised if that was not their logic. Nevertheless, the essence, the core of what Margaret Sanger was doing was black genocide. That was the essence of it. This is not a connection to something that was going on in general in society. And because she was like so many of the people that they've tried to purge, because she was involved in business at a lot of different levels, that some of the, she was on the board of a corporation that profited from the slave trade. No. This was at the core. She was trying to eliminate black people as a eugenicist. This was the core of what she was doing. The article from the Christian Post points out they failed to confront white supremacy within their own organization. They continue to aggressively prey on black and brown communities with abortion. That is a quote from Deborah Honeycutt, the Human Coalition Action Board. She said, Planned Parenthood has contributed to the harm of women of color for decades, and the current head, Alexis McGill Johnson's so-called reckoning, does nothing to change that truth. Benjamin Watson, a former NFL football player, vice president of strategic relations for Human Coalition, argued that it's time for Planned Parenthood to take the next step or their denunciation of Margaret Sanger rings hollow. He said, whether they personally identify with Sanger's ideology or not, they continue to carry out her mission by serving as a leading executioner of our children. The same Sanger they claim to disavow would applaud their efforts and results, as a disproportionate percentage of black children have been killed in Planned Parenthood abortion clinics. Let's not stop with Margaret Sanger. And I don't like to push cancel culture, but we need to understand who these people are. If you continue with the mission of eugenics, and if you look at the very first letterhead of their first fundraiser. You know who else's name is on that besides Margaret Sanger? Right up at the top of the letterhead? Prescott Bush, patriarch of the Bush clan. And I don't think that that's a historical aberration or forgotten. Because when Jeb Bush was governor of Florida, they made a big deal out of stopping a six-figure contribution to Planned Parenthood by the state government. And yet, there was a seven-figure contribution made by the foundation that the Bush family runs at the same time. That's the kind of misdirection, the kind of lies that makes me think that they've never given up on that. Besides the fact of what happened to Terry Schiavo, you think that somebody who would let that kind of thing happen to Terry Schiavo would respect the sanctity of life at the other end of life for an innocent child? If you're going to allow the murder and you're going to stand by and do nothing, as a probate judge withholds food and water and arrests the people who tried to give Terry Schiavo food and water? You had one Bush brother as president. You had another one as governor. They didn't lift a finger to stop that probate judge from murdering Terry Schiavo. You cannot acknowledge the racist person in history without admitting to the racist vision that has resulted in nearly 80% of Planned Parenthood's abortion facilities being located within walking distance of minority neighborhoods. And just recently, you had the Smithsonian Institute unveil a new girlhood exhibit. This was last October. At the Museum of American History, they paid tribute to Margaret Sanger along with another notable figure in women's history. Again, starting to see these abortion clinics start to acknowledge their history, as we saw in with Marie Stopes in the UK. In 1939 letter, Sanger described her plan to reach out to the Southern black ministers and leaders in order to quell suspicion about birth control clinics. Now, listen to this, and substitute for birth control clinics, substitute vaccine resistance. She explained that she thought the Negro population would be more amenable to learning about birth control from black leaders. Quote, while the colored Negroes have great respect for white doctors, they can get closer to their own members and more or less lay their cards on the table, she wrote in 1939. They do not do this with the white people. And if we can train the Negro doctor at the clinic, he can go among them with enthusiasm, with knowledge, which I believe will have far-reaching results. This is the same tactic that these people are using with the black community, the same tactic that they're using with the white community, and that is to use leaders that are respected, that are trusted, pastors, doctors, community leaders, celebrities, athletes, to convince the people who are afraid of an experimental vaccine that they should take it. These people have been practicing this death by medicine for a long time, haven't they? They know exactly how to run the propaganda. Let's take a look at what is happening with Hollywood and how it aligns with politics and with vaccines. You know, we have the person who's going to be producing the Oscars this year. Interestingly enough, is Steven Soderbergh, film director. And he's going to be producing the new Oscars, even as the Oscar producer says that metrics show vast swaths of people turn the show off as stars lecture people on politics. This is an article from the Daily Caller. One producer of the Oscars, who spoke on condition of anonymity, admitted to the New York Times, quote, vast swaths of people turn off the show when the stars start talking about politics. So, what's the answer to that? Well, you're going to give them more time to talk about politics. Despite this data, showing a decline in the ratings for the Oscars when stars did that, producers of the 93rd Academy Awards show said that they're planning to give winners more time this year for acceptance speeches, according to a Reuters piece titled, Oscars Show Reinvented as a Movie with Masks and Longer Speeches. Boy, doesn't that sound like something you can barely wait to see? Don't you just want to watch these self-absorbed people preen on about how great they are? You love me. You really love me. No, I don't. Actually, I don't. While they wear masks as well and virtue signal about that and then make even longer speeches than ever. So it's going to be directed by Steven Soderbergh, the guy who produced, you may remember it, certainly, it's an unforgettable movie. It is a forgettable movie, but an unforgettable title. Sex, Lies, and Videotape, right? Well, I guess we could call this one Sex, Lies, and Masks, because that's what's going to be, the Oscars is going to be about that. Sex, Lies, and Masks. Brian York says it seems obvious that the answer to declining ratings of the Oscars telecast is to make the show longer, to make acceptance speeches longer, to make wearing a mask a central element of us all. Yes, that's what we want to see, don't we? We want to see these celebrities all masked up and preaching to us about politics. So you're going to have Harrison Ford? This is the way Soderbergh describes this. He says it's being shot more like a movie, with presenters like Harrison Ford and Brad Pitt and Halle Berry playing themselves, or at least a version of themselves. And we could say, as they frequently do about these movies, you know, based on a true story. No, this should have the disclaimer at the front if they're going to be about masks. Based on an untrue story. This year's ceremony will take place April the 25th at multiple locations. I guess it's what, Sunday? They typically do this on Sunday. 20 different locations, satellite spots around the world, will allow every nominee a chance to be in front of the camera, which is what they all want. The largest one being in London. Soderbergh promised that masks will, quote, play a very important role in the story. That topic is very central to the narrative. China is going to be censoring the Oscars, at least the live broadcast of that. I guess they may do it in a rebroadcast so that they can edit out the parts that they object to. Kind of sounds like, when you look at what China is doing, kind of sounds like what's happening here in the U.S. You know, as I talked about Chelsea Clinton and how she appropriately, as Glenn Greenwald pointed out, you know, we should remove from the internet anything that offends Chelsea Clinton. She is going to be going to have an audience with the Pope, along with Fauci and Birx and a lot of these other people. Isn't that interesting? But China is going to censor the Oscars to block a Hong Kong protest film called Do Not Split. It takes viewers into the streets as protesters go head-to-head with the police in a desperate fight to preserve their freedoms. So you can understand that would be something that China would not want you to see. I'm surprised that this is something that Hollywood wants you to see, because they've been kowtowing to Hollywood. As a matter of fact, it sounds so much like Disney, doesn't it? The Communist Party's propaganda department issued the order to all media outlets to not broadcast the Oscars in real time, according to an anonymous source. Along with Do Not Split, censors in China objected to the nomination of Beijing-born director Chloe Zhao, who was up for Best Director for her film Nomadland, and she was once hailed as the pride of China. But then it came out that in a 2013 interview with a filmmaker magazine, she recalled the China of her youth as, quote, a place where everyone lies everywhere, a place where there are lies everywhere. So to escape that, she went to Hollywood. I think that Beijing is helping the aim of this movie. Yeah, the Streisand effect. And then we have Sesame Street, introducing two black Muppets to teach Elmo that skin color is an important part of who we are. And I presume at the end of the episode, they can all the Sesame Street characters can go down the street and tear down a statue of Martin Luther King, who said we need to be judged by the content of our character, not the color of our skin. The ABCs of racial literacy. Let me tell you what the ABCs of that's probably being sold here. Critical race theory. That's the ABC. Now, they did have something good to say in this story reported by Fox News, I have to say. One of the things that they said was good. Even though we look different, we're all part of the human race. Yes. Said that many times. I think that is the appropriate message. I am, however, they said that there's no difference in us. We just have different color skin, but we're all human beings. And that is a Christian message. But that is not the message, I suspect, that if this is being done by PBS, if this is being hailed by the liberals, I suspect that there's something more to it than that. I am, you are, we are somebody. I am strong in my skin, yeah. See, the problem is this is not the message they say in schools to white children of all ages, thanks to the communists, the Marxists, like Bill Ayers, who... his mentor created the idea of white skin privilege, which Bill Ayers shortened, good marketer, and got into education, just called it white privilege. That was the desire to create a race war with Marxism, not to bring everybody together on the basis of our common humanity, which is the Christian message. And finally, before we go to our interview with Nick Cole, Galaxy's Edge, we have Matthew McConaughey, may be a viable candidate for Texas governor. And this is coming after he took a lot of hits when he did an interview with a podcast talking about he didn't like the intolerance and the hate from the far left. And they said his middle-of-the-road appeal, however, even though the poll shows him to be very popular because he's an actor and he hasn't said anything really about politics. Everything that he's said so far, he hasn't taken a position on anything. Everything has been conciliatory, and that's good. But once he starts to get into politics, the devil is going to be in the details. As they pointed out, even though he's hugely popular with the Democrats and even with the Republicans, once they realize that he is somebody who is in the middle of the road, they're not going to be happy with him. They want somebody who is radical. One of the things that he said in his podcast was he said, I talk about how we need to get to the middle of the road. And he said, I had one of my friends tell me, you know what's in the middle of the road? Yellow lines and dead armadillos. And Matt McConaughey said, he said, now it's perfectly safe in the middle of the road. Armadillos can do whatever they want. The people on the left and right are so far on the left and right, their tires aren't even on the pavement. That was a good line. That was absolutely a good line. And so it is important for us to not try to continually polarize people, but also understand that part of the dialectic materialism is to offer you thesis, antithesis, to try to get you to accept something that's somewhere in the middle. And my philosophy is that the things that ought to unite us in terms of politics our love of liberty based on our respect for each other as human beings and to try to minimize the footprint of government in our life. That is something that could unite us. But not being friendly, not having a celebrity, but to unite along the lines of liberty. And so as we look at this, and a lot of people say, well, this is early, and he can take an aggressive centrist approach, but he's probably not going to get the support of Democrats. And once he starts talking about politics, it's going to divide everybody. And that's true if you don't make liberty the center of your politics. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Nick Cole. Again, he's a co-author, very popular series called Galaxy's Edge. And he has something to say about Hollywood rejecting this very popular series that some were looking at to make a film system out of this. He was told by a Hollywood studio, we're not interested in making white Christian trash. And he said, there's nothing in my book that is either white or Christian, but they're talking about my audience. And he has a lot to say about Hollywood. So stay with us. We're going to be right back with Nick Cole.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, and we're back, and we have on the line with us Nick Cole, co-author of a very good science fiction series that my son loves. He's got the entire collection. We got it for him as a gift. I haven't read it because I don't have time. I am so subsumed with reading news. Unfortunately, I can't do things for recreation or even importance, but it is a very popular series. And Nick Cole responded to an article that was put out by the Disney head, studio head, she was talking about what she would not produce during a panel discussion. This Disney executive named Walden said that we've got new guidelines, and basically it's quotas for how they are going to determine which projects are going to green light. Things like 50% or more of regular or recurring written characters come from underrepresented groups, 50% or more of regular and recurring actors come from underrepresented groups, and so forth. You get the idea. And he tweeted that out, and he goes, yeah, I can confirm that. I was told that Hollywood was not interested in producing any white Christian trash. And then he clarified that and said, well, I'm not talking about Hollywood. And it really is a much bigger problem than just one studio, even though there's not that many studios. So joining us now is Nick Cole. Thank you so much for coming on, Nick.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Tell everybody before we get in the interview where they can find your website. And of course, your books are sold everywhere. But tell people about your website.
Well, the series that was up for consideration in Hollywood and was shot down is called Galaxy's Edge. It was before the Disney theme park. And you can find that over at galacticoutlaws.com. Mm-hmm. Or you could just go to Audible if you like the audiobooks, where it's one of the number one bestsellers in space marine, space opera, science fiction. Or you can go over to Amazon and get those books there. They're everywhere. Start off with Galaxy's Edge 1 in audio or Legionnaire. Or right now we have a sale on, if you like The Mandalorian, we have a bounty hunter series that's called Contracts and Terminations. People love it. It's about a mercenary general named Tyrus Rex. It's 99 cents for 3 books right now over on Amazon.
Tyrus Rex, is he named after Rex Tillerson? I know my son has read the books, and he's widely read, and he really does love them. Highly recommends the books. Very excited to get you on. And I was excited when I saw some of the comments that you made about Hollywood and your involvement there. Talk about what you have seen at Hollywood and what these people are really up to, because I've seen a progression. Now when I look at what Disney is doing with the Cruella series, I mean, they're turning Cruella de Vil into a Joker-type character. I mean, it's really going downhill fast, isn't it?
Yeah, the villains, I watched actually the trailer this weekend when I went to the movies, and I remarked to my wife, I said, you know, the villains are becoming the heroes now.
Yes.
But, you know, it's the interesting thing about Hollywood is a lot of the times they're actually not interested in the content specifically. What they're interested in is the numbers and the base that you've gone out as a writer and generated. And that's how we get, you know, movies like Dune or big properties that come out of the literary industry. And so Galaxy's Edge is one of those, like with your son, that's reached a large audience. Not necessarily all conservative. We have hardcore leftists. We have moderates like Matthew McConaughey, who we think would be great for Tyrus Rex. Also Idris Elba would be great for Tyrus Rex too. We just love good actors, and those are good actors. Mm-hmm. But, Hollywood a lot of the times looks at the numbers and they go, well, what can these people do? And so about 3 different times we got close in the Hollywood studio system. We're considering your thing. And then it would kind of suddenly disappear. And this last time around, a management company came to us and they said, we really believe in this project and we like your numbers and we like your connection with the military audience that's out there that's very underserved. And this was something that Audible over at Amazon had specifically done a deal with us, because they looked at their Jack Ryan numbers and they said, you know, you guys are the only ones doing military content that's serving this crowd. I'm a veteran. My partner and I are just so pro-veteran, pro-military. A lot of our readers are guys who will actually tell you they take their books, Galaxy's Edge books, with them to the VA just for the sort of like calming effect against PTSD. We have a huge mission outreach with Mission 22. We love our culture. So Hollywood saw that. They see the numbers, you know, everybody sees the numbers in the algorithm. And so this production company said, you know, we want to take you to Hollywood. And I stopped the conversation. I said, you know, like I have an active presence on Twitter and I'm of a very specific persuasion politically. And we've been down this road before and been shot down. And they said, well, we think the climate is changing, and we think that
for the worse.
And you're like, Yeah, and like some rube at a carnival, I was like, well, golly, maybe it is changing, because I wanna believe that America is good, and that people will learn the error of their ways, you know, and shutting down voices and stuff like that. I want to believe that anybody can change, because I've changed in my life. And so I believe, and so like, I'm like, okay, well, you guys can represent it. And about 2 weeks later, they came back to us, and it was a younger man who was actually representing us. And this was kind of his first gig. He's a real go-getter, really nice kid. And he came back just brokenhearted. And he had that, you know, when you're 52 years old, you're used to dealing with younger men who are optimistic. And seeing when they get that first dose of how the stakes are cut and how the world really is. And he came back, he says, I got to tell you what happened. And I'm going to tell you verbatim what happened, because I can't believe it. And my boss can't believe it. And this is a big production company that has shows right now on Amazon and Netflix. So they're in the industry, they know, and I'm not besmirching those companies. But he just said, basically, they came back and they said, we're not going to make films for right-wing Christian trash. And I immediately, being the narcissistic writer that I am, thought they were talking about me. I don't care. That's probably true. I am trash. I am right-wing. I am narcissistic. I am a Christian. You know, like, good. I got, like, you know, as a Christian, just to diverge a little bit, if someone calls you a Christian as a slur, mm-hmm. That's the best thing that can ever happen, because you just got caught doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
So that's right. It's always it's a badge of honor for me. But my partner, who Jason Ansbach, who's very smart, and he turned around after the meeting and goes, you know that they weren't calling you white trash Christian. They were calling the audience white trash Christian. And that's when my mama bear kind of raised up.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's okay to slur me, but like, we've got guys who lost legs in Afghanistan. One of them is one of our readers. You can actually watch the GoPro footage where he lost his legs. He was a medic, and then tied off his own tourniquets. And he's up for a major award. He loves Galaxy's Edge. So you're not calling him white Christian trash.
Yeah,
that's not right. On my watch. And so when that ABC lady felt that it was okay to go to the whitest college in Southern California, which I live near, and virtue signal on that level about dismissing the work of people, she was talking about people who had sat down and, as Hemingway said, opened up a page and bled. That's how you write things.
That's right.
And those people had put good faith into writing those screenplays. And here she was almost dunking on them or taking some kind of victory lap about the hard work and saying, we turned it down because it wasn't identity enough.
Yeah.
And that's a little salty. That's a little brutal. That's a little cold for my take. And so that's not going to abide on my watch. I'm going to stand up and say something.
Well, you know, as you point out, when they hate on you for being a Christian, we all know how this is going to work out, Nick, right? Christ said, I'll build my church and the gates of the gatekeepers of Hollywood will not prevail against it, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, these people want to tell us what to think, and they have it's not even in their best interest. They have such a narrow perspective that they want to sell to you. But I have seen this over and over again. My wife and I owned for about a little over 13 years, we owned a chain of video stores back in the 80s. And I've watched how Hollywood reacts to this. I know where they make the most money. They make the most money doing family content and kids content and PG content, but they will purposely make it R because that fulfills their desire. They will leave money on the table so that they can push their perversion to people. That's how closely they follow their belief system. If only the Christians were that committed, we really would not have the gatekeepers of Hollywood prevailing against us. But I've seen that. And by the way, let me just show the book here. This is Galaxy's Edge. You can see it's
thank you.
Got a great... Here, put it over here so you can see it maybe that way, a little bit better, closer to the light.
The tagline is Stormtroopers in Afghanistan. It was very much written. Star Wars is about the battle for the Jedi soul, and Galaxy's Edge is about the battle for the Stormtrooper soul. And it's neither white, right-wing, or Christian. The main character, you could almost say, is Cambodian, but it's in the future, but he has a Cambodian name. And my partner and I specifically don't do... You know, they don't all get around and pray before going on a mission. We don't do Christian stuff because not everybody's a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And we're here to entertain. But I think it still comes through in the moral content.
And that's the key thing. You know, when I look at fiction, one of the things I liked is how my son, who reads your books, how he learned to read was he read the stories of G.A. Henty. I read him one of them, and they were historical novels. What he would do is he'd take a real historical event, and then he would weave some characters around that. And he liked it. But the thing that struck me when I read it was even the bad guys in G.A. Henty, and he was a Victorian novelist, even the bad guys were better than our heroes today. And you were talking about how they're making the evil ones the heroes. And I, as I watched Cruella and the trailer for that, I was thinking about how this whole thing has progressed, Nick. I remember when I was a kid watching the old Universal movies of The Mummy and Dracula and stuff like that, the way they originally did them with Universal, going back to the 1930s, they were kind of like monsters. They were like wild animals that you wanted to stay away from, right? But they weren't really the kind of evil that we saw Hollywood portray later when they started doing serial killers. And then gradually it got to be more graphic, more splatter oriented, and then they turn it to the point where you're seeing things from the killer's perspective. Now we're at the point where they're glorifying these killers as a protagonist, and they're making them far more evil than they ever were in their previous incarnations of the Disney stories. You know, things like the Cruella story, perfect example of that.
It's that fascination. You go over to Netflix and you look at the trending movies, and it's a fascination with, you know, murder documentaries.
Yes.
And it's strange, you know, and it was funny. I got some pushback yesterday. They've tried to come and cancel me before. They went after that tweet last week. They came and tried to cancel me again with a publisher that I partner with. The publisher shot him down, said, you know, that's not our job. We don't do that. And I was sitting there thinking about it. I took my wife out and she had a margarita. I drink Perrier. And, I was thinking about Gary Cooper in High Noon.
Yeah.
And I don't want, you know, don't want to be the worst thing in the world is some old guy waxing nostalgic about a movie, but they don't make those movies anymore. And not because they're outdated, but because they don't want us on our side to see one guy going out into the street all by himself.
That's right.
They want you to know that you're surrounded and alone.
Yes.
They want you to feel isolated. They want to show you darkness. They want to show you murder. And they want to say, gosh, look at Joaquin Phoenix here in Cruella Chick. Doesn't this look fun, breaking all the rules and being immoral about it? Mm-hmm. As opposed to Gary Cooper going to everybody like, listen, if we all band together, we can do this. Everybody shoots him down. At the end of the day, he's the guy who walks out into the street. And I think every person who's taking a stand, and you're right about Matthew McConaughey, you're in the middle, but you'll get pushed one way or the other. And you'll feel like Gary Cooper walking out into that street, you know,
that's right.
As they call it in France, the train bell rings three times. We call it High Noon. Mm-hmm. And we all on conservative Christians, libertarians, I'm a constitutional conservative. I think we're all having that High Noon moment.
Yes, that's right. You know, when we look at the fact that they're doing this again, not because there's money involved. They will sacrifice and leave money on the table to do what they really have a passion about. And I think a lot of people are starting to realize that Hollywood is so narrow, so defined, and we look at the highest rated, highest grossing R-rated film ever was Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ, right? Because typically R-rated films didn't make as much money as the lower rated films did. And yet they won't make a film like that. Even if they could understand what it was reaching out to people about, they would reject that just because of the values. And so Mel Gibson has enough money, he can do his own production company. But I've talked to a fellow McAleer who did, they did a movie about Gosnell. They're looking at possibly doing a movie about Hunter Biden. Because it's a story that you would think that Hollywood would be interested in. It's got so much perversion in it. You know, you would think they would revel in that. But they're not interested in doing that, again, because of politics. So he's crowdsourcing that again. It was a very popular series that came out not too long ago, The Chosen. It was a Christian film, and they raised, they're doing it as a series of films, seasons, about the New Testament. And they are funding it $10 million a year with crowdsourcing. I know that for what you're doing, you would need to have probably for special effects, you might have to have a lot more money than that. Have you ever thought about crowdfunding your own film?
We just had a meeting about that yesterday with the producer who's working with Gina Carano. And we decided to make, we decided to go in two directions. We're going to develop a series and we're going to develop a small movie. And both of them are going to be lower budget. We're going to make a commitment to do better storytelling at a lower budget. Because we have such a massive audience, we'll immediately become profitable and we'll show that. And hopefully by that time, sanity will have returned and people will want to make money. I applaud that production company that came to us like earnestly and said, we think we can change the culture here. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they were so shocked that they had to actually pick their mouths up off the floor hearing a fellow executive in the community say that about people. But, you know, the deal is if we all keep trying and we keep doing our things, we will win because we are right. And at the end of the day, the truth does win, right? Does matter. And that's why we're in this PSYOP right now where I think our spirit, we're being told it's not high noon. It's day of the locust. It's masks. It's you can't do anything. You better join in and everything like that. But I feel the culture shifting. The culture shifted with Trump. You know, love him or hate him, the dude stood up and he was him. And a lot of people responded about that. Now, do you have to do that? No. But if you stand up, you can do something. And Galaxy's Edge, for all the hate that it gets on the progressive left side, pays quite well. We do really well and the readers are entertained. And that's our main focus, that they're having fun and they're having fun. So over in our little, you know, they say, oh, build your own economy. We did. And everybody's having a great time.
Yeah. And you've got a big following. I know you've got a very big following. I'll give you another example of Hollywood executives. One of the, back in the day, again, we went to a convention and DVD was just coming online. And we'd been carrying it for like a couple of years. But he spoke to the Video Software Dealers Association, which is a trade organization for people that were video stores. And he was trying to sell them on the idea of a DVD. I had been selling my customers on the idea of a DVD. And I told them, I said, you know, you can, and they've already done this, they set up airline versions of films because, you know, Hollywood would put the kind of depravity on that you're not going to broadcast on a plane. So they would have them change the film and cut out certain scenes that had gratuitous sex or violence in it. And you still had the story there and it still worked. And people would even, you know, pay to watch it on the airlines. And so you had the airline versions of that. And I said, there's been talk about how they could easily do that with a DVD, and they did have a company that did that for a while, and then Hollywood shut them down. But before that happened, I went to this convention with my wife Karen, and I spoke to the New Line executive in charge of video production who was pushing the DVD. And I came up to him after the presentation. And I said, you know, I got a lot of customers who are really excited about the fact that they could rent a story, and instead of it being an R-rated film, they could watch a PG version. I said, do you think you might do that? And he goes, well, the writers really, the directors really hate it when we do that kind of stuff. I said, yeah, but the audiences want it. He goes, yeah, I know, but probably won't happen. And you know what they did after that? They came out their very first DVD that they did a kind of branch around. What they did was they went from an R-rated film to an X-rated film. They added stuff into it. They went the opposite direction. That's the heart, the dark heart of Hollywood. Yeah. That's really where they are, Nick. And you know
as
well.
I have a friend who's kind of a low-level fixer in Hollywood, but he works with a lot of big wigs. And I said to him, you know, they're losing money. He says, yeah, they know they're losing money. And I said, but when are they going to realize that they've got to stop alienating, you know, let's just use the Hillary Clinton, Mitt Romney, you think 47% of the audience and leaving that cash on the table. And he said, they realize it, but they're committed to it because they think that this is their moment and they're willing to lose the money. And when he said that, I just was like, that's hopeless. And then when we were in this deal with this production company, I said, I'm going to tell you honestly, the first group of people or whatever show it is that makes honest content that serves the other half that's not being served. And no, you don't have to go all in and do, you know, you don't even have to do a conservative film, but do a film, you know, or a TV series that's just good and that literally appeals, try to appeal to those people as much as you try to appeal to Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. And the first person to do that is going to print money hand over fist.
That's right.
I wish it would have been Galaxy's Edge. We're going to go our own way now and try to do it on our own, but somebody's going to do it. somebody's going to make the conservative Game of Thrones, the conservative Lord of the Rings, the conservative Walking Dead. And it's not even going to be conservative. It's just going to be entertaining, but it's not going to be filled with the agenda garbage.
Yeah. And it's going to be uplifting as well, because people want to see an uplifting story. Actually, people like, you know, when Hollywood was at its most popular, that was when America was selling stories about good things and noble things and aspiring to higher stuff instead of the degrading, bullying, propagandist type of content that they're pushing on people now. That really sells.
That's what I said in those tweets. You know, I subtweeted off my own tweet and I just started talking about that. I said, you've got to stop watching films made by deviants and drug addicts.
Yeah.
If Hollywood were a person, you would not let them in to sit on your couch.
Yeah, I love that.
Night after night, you invite them to sit down and literally... They're thinking, you know, the worst thing in the world is to have your 73-year-old mother say, I found this show and I really liked it. And then they showed this thing and it was filthy. And you're just like, I'm sorry, Mom. They don't understand. And they're sometimes as innocent as your children.
That's right.
And I can't, you know, I don't have children that young, but I can't imagine sitting there on that couch with that level. You're better off not doing it. You're better off going and having a campfire. Hey, read a Galaxy's Edge book, read someone's book.
That's right.
Go shoot guns, do anything, then let Hollywood into your home until they stop trying to destroy your family. And they really are. It's not just like, oh, we want to make sick stuff. They really do want to destroy your family.
That's right. Harvey Weinstein and Roman Polanski, they're not aberrations. They're just the people who got caught. I loved what you had to say. Hollywood is a place filled with the worst people who somehow think they hold the moral high ground about what gets made while raping girls and molesting small children. If Hollywood were a person, you wouldn't let them sit on your couch. Your life would be a lot better and fuller if you stopped watching movies made by deviants and drug addicts. You'd be smarter, thinner, and richer, and your children wouldn't be destroyed. Seriously. And that is the truth. That absolutely is. You're totally right about that. Talk a little bit more, though, before we run out of time. Let's talk a little bit more about the movie. I'm sorry, not the movie, but the book, which may be turned into a movie. Galaxy's Edge. You're talking about, this is a soldier's story, kind of told from their perspective, kind of an Afghanistan type of narrative, right?
Yeah, we saw a lot of guys coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq, and there was a disillusionment there. They went, you know, one guy summed it up, and he said, I went to be Luke Skywalker, and I ended up a stormtrooper kicking in doors.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't think. And so, and at the same time, my partner, Jason Anspach in the venture, he is a diehard Star Wars fanatic. He can tell you the name of every bot, droid, he loves it. It was his, you know, it's his passion. Like, you know, a Latin monk transcribing the 15th century Bible is Jason with Star Wars. And then when Disney acquired Star Wars, they took what's known as the expanded universe and they tossed it aside. Now, the expanded universe kept the Star Wars faithful alive for years. Other things happened. Luke got married to Mara Jade. A planet got dropped on Chewbacca, those kinds of things. So when that was all thrown out, those fans were disaffected. Those readers were disaffected. And so we said, well, let's tell them a Star Wars where that doesn't happen. And let's not get into the Jedi. Let's talk about these stormtroopers and tell stories about how every soldier, even if you're on the right side or the wrong side, there's a universal suffering there and a universal nobility. And so we started from that. We used U.S. Army Rangers as our template for that because we think they're the finest premier shock troops in the world. And they're our friends, too. They're great people. And so we just began to tell those stories and weave it into a space opera, the likes of Star Wars. And we're being told better than, which was why Hollywood came according initially, because they actually liked the idea. The audience likes the idea, and we just have some really great characters. We have the main guy named Lieutenant Chun, and he's a legionnaire, and he's the 1% of the 1% of the 1% in the galaxy. He's the toughest soldier. It's very hard to be a legionnaire, and he goes out there and he KTFs, you know, aliens and enemies, and I think people like those stories. They're good and they're noble. We have the stories about his general, which is Tyrus Rex. Who's this sort of 2,000-year-old mercenary who's having some Alzheimer problems. Think Clint Eastwood. You know, that would be a perfect archetype. And he's just a tough guy who's forgotten more about killing than most people will learn. But he lives by the Ranger Creed. And he also lives by something his dad taught him, which is don't ever do anything that you'll be ashamed of, which is something my dad taught me. And it's just fine characters and good stories. And there is death and there is tragedy and there is violence. Those things are in life, but there is the human spirit and how we're all going to address those things.
And your series, is it kind of, I mean, you know, you mentioned that there's one guy that's like 2,000 years old, but I mean, is it basically humans and they're engaging with some aliens and some...
If you watch Star Wars, it's basically Star Wars. Blasters, bots, and aliens, and jumps to light speed, big fleet battles, and pretty gritty, hardcore action combat on the ground. If you're a veteran, you'll love it. If you're a young kid, boy or girl, and you like those kinds of those stories, then you'll really like it. I think the alien stuff is actually a lot of fun. It's fun making aliens and watching them observe human culture and then showing that in a lot of ways, they're just as human as humans.
That's great. Yeah, it sounds like a great series. I can understand why my son would love it so much. I look at some of the science fiction, and you know, you talk about religion and how it gets interjected. You know, somebody's going to inject their values into things. And as they're remaking Dune, I remember reading that when I was in college, and I was I thought it was a very interesting world that he had created there. Some interesting ideas going on there. And then there was also a palace intrigue, but then it got subsumed in the trilogy. It got subsumed into this kind of fake messianic complex type of thing, which is kind of this counterfeit Christian thing. And there's elements in Star Wars of Buddhism and other things like that. So you have these different types of religions pulled in. If it's not Christian values, it's going to be a different kind of value that's pulled in there. And that's always the key thing. But it's always really about the characters. And it's when you have that kind of Christian Western civilization understanding, that's when you're going to see the characters that have the kind of moral standards that we really want to try to reclaim in our society, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the values that have actually made a society instead of a dark Bronze Age world of some pretty awful concepts. So, you know, that's the battle for the American soul right now. And we're using Galaxy's Edge to first and foremost entertain, but just to present this case that there are things worth saving, worth being noble about. And you don't, you know, in a rush to create utopia, you don't burn everything down. And that's probably a big theme in the series.
Yeah.
And it was a theme that people overwhelmingly responded to. And so, like I said, we have left it. Like sometimes there'll be a hardcore leftist that comes in and they're like, I love this story. I don't even see the politics and everything. And I just love that guy because he showed up for the fun. Because here's the big thing is we get letters from people and they say, my dad died of cancer last week. And we spent the week by his bedside because he loved books. And we listened to your book and we had a great time. And that's a memory for me. And I always go back to that. And that's not a one-off letter. That's a common letter. But it reminds me that at the end of the day, before I want to inject something and beat somebody over the head with something that I am personally passionate about, I am there to entertain the dying person, which was very much, I'm going to use my last seconds to talk about Cervantes. Cervantes was a one-armed soldier for Spain. And one night he was captured by the Dutch. And they were going to put him to death in the morning. And he told them stories all night long because Cervantes was a storyteller. When it came time to put him to death, the Dutch sergeant said it would be a crime to put such a good storyteller to death. And they let him go. So I'm always reminded that I've got to be like Cervantes. I've got to tell stories to entertain as though my life depended on it.
That's a great anecdote. I didn't know that about Cervantes. Kind of the Spanish Shakespeare. And it's kind of like the tale of Scheherazade there. I didn't know that actually happened to him in real life. Looking at this story, one last thing here. The galaxy is a dumpster fire. I love this description on the back of your book, Galaxy's Edge, Legionnaire. The galaxy is a dumpster fire, a hot, stinking dumpster fire. And most days, I don't know if the Legionnaires are putting out the flames or fanning them into an inferno. And I think that's one of the things that really resonates with people in our country. I just talked yesterday to Dan McKnight, who is trying to end these, you know, he's a veteran, and a lot of other veterans are concerned about what has happened in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they want to make sure that this doesn't continue, that it doesn't happen again. And so they're working at the state level because they know that our empire in Washington is turning a deaf ear to this. As a matter of fact, they're working very hard to shut this down. So they're going to the state level, and they have some bills that they're pushing out that say, without a declaration of war, You're not going to send the National Guard to a foreign war to do this.
Yeah.
And that's getting a lot of pushback from the empire. And it's that kind of context. I think that's why it resonates so much, especially with our veterans. They go there, they realize that this is more of an exercise in just raw power than anything else. This is not really about responding to a true threat to our country. It's really more about them, you know, having a practice exercise or keeping a footprint in a country for other ulterior motives.
Yeah, when we look at the World War II, the Greatest Generation, even today they will tell you they went out to confront evil, to smite evil. And I want soldiers to feel like that they're going out to croak evil.
That's right.
I don't want them to feel like they're going somewhere to help Joe Biden's brother build an apartment complex.
That's right. And that's what it is. And that's why, again, going back to the, and I've talked about this many times, talked about it yesterday with Dan McKnight, we go back to what our civilization was based on. Why we have a declaration of war by the Congress is because of Christian principles, going back to Augustine, that we're going to determine that we're, first of all, not the aggressor. Secondly, that we are trying to, we've got a definite goal here. We're going to try to minimize casualties, and we're going to try to end this as quickly as possible and stop this aggression. And that was what World War II was about. And we haven't had a war like that since then, and we haven't had a formal declaration of war like that since then, because that was when we had a moral purpose, and that makes the difference not only in a war, but in everything about our society, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It yeah. really does. It's a beautiful country. Ignore the noise.
Yeah.
You're surrounded by fine Americans.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. And here's a website that's on the back of the book, www.inthelegion.com. Inthelegion.com. Is that the best website for people to get information
yeah,
about?
Yeah, that's the fastest way to get there. Just Google search Nick Cole, Jason Anspach, Galaxy's Edge, Galactic Outlaws. Thank you so much for having me on. This was a delightful conversation. Great way to start the day. Now it's time to go drink coffee and do word count.
There you go. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation. And you got to get that movie done. I might be able to find some time. I don't have a commute anymore, but I might be able to find it some time to listen to the audiobooks. Thank you so much, Nick Cole.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Right.
All right. And that's it for our broadcast today. Thank you for listening. I'll remind you one more time of where you can find our content. Please make sure that you share our content. It's difficult for us to get past the social media compartmentalization and other issues. It is, I think, we're covering issues that are vital to people's life and liberty. If you feel that way, we would appreciate your support, your prayers, and also passing along this information. You can find it at thedavidknightshow.com. And you can also correspond with us at davidknightshow@protonmail.com. We can also send contributions via PayPal that way, as well as Subscribestar, Venmo, Cash App. You'll find all those links, Bitcoin, our P.O. Box. You'll find all of that, as well as all the places where you can find the program, audio and video content, as well as live stream at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.